Good evening. This is the Thursday, April 5th, 2018, regular meeting of the City of Morro Bay's Harbor Advisory Board. We're meeting at the Veterans Memorial Building, and we have a quorum present this evening. Board Member Dana McClish is not with us at this time, and our council liaison, Mr. Makowetski, let us know that he will not be with us this evening. So we'll observe a moment of silence, please. Thank you. And Pledge of Allegiance, Jeremiah.
Ready? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So our next order of business is Chair, Advisory Board Member, and Liaison Announcements and Presentations. We'll start down at Gene's ends with Board announcements. Gene, nothing. Jeremiah?
Yeah, I just wanted to take the opportunity to mention again that the Blessing of the Fleet will be held April 22nd at noon on the T Pier. And following that, there'll be a lunch, free lunch, here at the Morro Bay Veterans Hall. And this is the last opportunity we'll have to mention it here. So it is April 22nd.
North T Pier, South T Pier?
On the North T Pier.
What is a pre-lunch, please?
A what?
A pre, oh, free. Oh, free, free lunch.
Free lunch.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks. I got
there
it.
There is a free lunch.
I got it.
There is. And and then I just did want to mention that sport rock cod fishing opened April 1st, and just a mention of how important that is to the economics of our city. I went down there on the 1st and the 2nd, and both days the parking lot was full. Down by Tidelands Park, and you know, it's obvious that sport fishing brings a lot of money and a great event for so many people. So it's always nice to see the parking lot full down there. Salmon season is going to be open April 7th through the 30th for sport. And then this week I had a good opportunity that this is the third year in a row that we've done this, but Dr. Jennifer O'Leary from Cal Poly, who has a fishery science class there and is also with Sea Grant, brings students down to the waterfront every year, and we have them on our boat, and They're a fishery science, so they have various branches of the fisheries and biologies that they're into. So they are postgraduates and graduate students and undergrads. So about a dozen of them were there this year, and we'll follow that up with they have a test in a month from now. It's a project that these people do. And a month from now, we will visit Cal Poly and help review their test and the projects. But it's a great, you know, it's something I just wanted to mention because we do a lot of that with Cal Poly. We work with Cal Poly quite a bit. And
we being whom, please?
Various members of the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization and various fishermen in the area. And it's something we never mention, but you know, we work with the estuary program and this college is here, and we've worked for many years with Cal Poly in events such as this or fairs such as this. But it's really nice to be able to show some of these younger people what the waterfront's all about.
Okay.
So that should do it.
Okay. Thank you, Jeremiah. Lynn?
Nothing.
Bill?
I wanted to, Dana?
Let's let him get sat down first.
No, I don't have anything.
Okay. Board member McClish has just joined us, so we'll let him take his coat off and settle down and see if he has any announcements.
Good evening. Thank you. I do have something. The Morro Bay Youth Sailing Foundation and the Yacht Club have put on a marine swap meet for a number of years. And this year we're going to expand and work along with the Friends of the Harbor Department and also the Maritime Museum and put together a much bigger event. And so we're looking forward to that on June 30th. So we're making big plans for that.
Also, it will be with the women for the fishery.
Commercial fishermen, yeah.
Commercial fishermen. We'll have four nonprofits, the Tri-W lot. We're going to create the first annual auction, kind of like a rummage sale for that people come down and rent booths if they have things to sell that are marine orientated. So there's a lot to be worked out, but June 30th, 2018, all day Saturday. So it should be a good event. If you have anything that you need to sell, you can come down and do it. So.
And if folks have marine-oriented equipment or goods or curios that they'd like to donate to the auction, how do they get them to you?
That's a very good question. And I'd be happy to receive those. They can get a hold of me through my website or through the email on the city website. That's probably the best way.
Okay. And I would ask the two of you to repeat the announcement during the May meeting as well, please. Okay. My announcement has to do with Morro Bay Beautiful's 15th annual citywide yard sale, which is tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday, April 6, 7, and 8. There are this year 137 local organizations, homeowners, and businesses signed up as sellers. There is a, quote, treasure map, unquote, that plots out all of the locations on a city map and lists very briefly what the folks have. And that is an insert in the current Bay News. And it can also be obtained at the Chamber of Commerce and at one of the businesses that's sponsoring this event, which is Brenda Sue's Consignment in Morro Bay. So apparently the organizers have been receiving all sorts of phone calls from people quite far away wanting to know what happens if it rains. Apparently, I'm from Seattle. Apparently that's a problem here. So the organizers want and the chamber want to assure the public that and the sellers that it will go on, rain or shine. According to Mr. Lindsay, who's the weatherman at the plant, the Diablo plant, he predicts showers on Saturday. Tomorrow's supposed to be okay, and Sunday's supposed to be okay, but we could wake up in the morning, it could be gorgeous, so who knows. There are, if it is does get a little inclement, the organizers of that event want me to let the public know that there are 20 of the designated sales that are wholly inside, and those can be identified on the treasure map all of those have four lines of text describing what they are selling or where they are. So that's how you can do. Any questions? Anybody that's interested in questions, you can call the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce at 805-772-4467. And I noticed on the agenda that the Harbor Department staff has quite a bit of information about the cleanup that occurs immediately thereafter, and so we'll leave that to the staff report. Okay, that brings us to public comment. Public comment for things that are either not on the agenda or are on the agenda and folks are not able to stay for that agenda item. Do we have any of such public comment? Please come to the mic, identify yourself, and tell us what's on your mind.
Good afternoon, or I guess towards evening. Bill Martini, Morro Bay. And I'm not sure. I know the working waterfront. There's an update later on. I wanted to comment on that. I don't know if now's the time or if I should hold off until the update. Other than that, I can get into it briefly, and if later on the working waterfront, that's the time to comment, I can go into more detail. I've been following it. We have property in that area. I just talked to the Planning Commission on the subject, and when I asked, I mentioned some of the changes are being proposed. Scott Graham at the time answered the planning commissioner and stated there's nothing going to be changed in that area. So I'm a little confused. I'm hearing that there are, you know, changes in the descriptions and, you know, possibly the zoning and that. So I mainly wanted to get clarity here on south of the boat launch, I guess you call it the south area, and that would be going down to the State Park Marina. As far as if you're strictly talking about the water as a working waterfront, because the city doesn't own the land in that area, there is a 35-foot wide strip of commercial property down in front of our property, which is the 225. That is very narrow, virtually unusable, because when you throw in a 10-foot setback off the water, 5-foot setback off the rear, you're down to virtually no commercial property of any usable. The fuel dock to the south of us, that actually is on a water lease site. All those buildings are hanging over the water, so that's virtually gone, and to the north it's fully developed. So I was just mainly getting clarity that when you're discussing what's, you know, on your working waterfront, if your idea is actually strictly in the water, or if you were also talking the land zoning, because from Main Street down, about 90% of that property is R1 zoning, and then there's this little thin strip that's waterfront commercial. There's about 27 homes I counted, and there's one small working boatyard still down in that area. The other thing I'd mention, as far as the State Park Marina, maybe Eric or Gene could clarify, but that's strictly for recreational boats. I think they have a restriction on any commercial boats in that area, so I'm not sure what kind of working waterfront would be down in that area. And you get to, I know you're talking about carrying it all the way down. The bird sanctuary, I know I was tied up next to Sandal when we kind of got that into the bird sanctuary. There were plans at one time for a marina, condos and all that. I have those plans, but that's gone. So that's primarily my comments. Is the true working waterfront used to be on the Embarcadero, and of course to the north. The Embarcadero had your tugboats. It was the Stockings had their tugboats down by the inn at Morro Bay. They made them move them up to the Embarcadero.
Mr. Martini?
Sure.
That you're going to 4 minutes now?
No problem.
And we have a three-minute limit.
Okay.
I will share with you.
Yes.
This, and because you've heard this before, I know you've heard this before.
Sure.
This body does not involve itself with land use planning or zoning in any way whatsoever.
Okay.
The work that the Harbor Advisory Board did relative to the working waterfront was to, at the instructions of council, was to develop a concept for working waterfront in Morro Bay, and that's a concept without regard to specific land use uses. And as you well know, it's the Community Development Department that deals with land use, and I would refer you to Mr. Graham to resolve any questions that you have in that regard, because we simply can't provide that information.
Well, I appreciate that. And it was primarily, if you're strictly on the water side of it, that totally answers, you know, in that southern area, that answers it, because it seemed like it was blending and I was never getting a clear answer. So thank you for that.
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you for your comments. Any other public comment? Seeing none, that brings us to the consent calendar. Item A1, approval of minutes from the Harbor Advisory Board meeting that was held on February 1, 2018. Do we have, do I have a motion to approve?
I'll make that motion.
Mr. Dougherty, second.
I'll second it.
Mr. LaFay, so moved and seconded. Do we have any comments? Anybody have any comments, corrections, questions, commentary on those minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of approving those minutes?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Carries unanimously. So that brings us to item B1, which is the Harbor Department's status report. So, Director Endersby, you're on.
Thank you and good evening. Did you want to do your mooring field update?
Oh, man, you got to be kidding me. Katie, you have my abject apologies.
Sorry.
That's terrible. We have a very important presentation this evening. Thank you, Eric. We have I'm really embarrassed because I've spent 2 days with this lady. The Harbor Advisory Board determined that it would be useful to have a mapping, GMS mapping project for the mooring field in Morro Bay. There are how many moorings, Eric?
125.
And Ms. Katie Alvarado, who's with us this evening, agreed to do the field work to collect the GPS locations of the moorings and then to plot, forgive me if she'll tell us what she was doing, but to create a database, a mapping database that will actually be can be incorporated, can be used by the city's land use mapping program. And so, Katie, you have a presentation for us? Please introduce yourself and tell us what the mission was.
Good evening. My name is Katie Alvarado, and I am a Cal Poly undergrad student. And I wanted to begin by thanking Ron Reisner for inviting me tonight and allowing me the opportunity to present to all of you the Morro Bay mooring field mapping project that I have been working on. So to begin, like it was mentioned, the city of Morro Bay has 125 moorings that are available for small craft use, either public or privately owned. And the city currently's geodatabase does not have any data available on the precise locations of the moorings. So the purpose of the project that I have been working on was to improve data availability and the precision of the moorings in order for it to be incorporated to the city's geodatabase. So the precise locations for each mooring can be a useful tool for the city's data management of the harbor, which I will discuss later on. So to begin, I'm pretty sure majority of the people in this room are familiar with the Morro Bay Harbor and the moorings, which is approximately runs a little bit over a mile long. And I'm going to begin just introducing the process of the project, and then we'll talk a little bit more in depth about it. So Ron graciously took us out on his boat and in order for us to collect the readings of the mooring's location. Once the data was collected, it was transferred using a Pathfinder software in order to create a data layer in ArcGIS, which is an online mapping tool that was used to create the maps for the purposes of this presentation. So, and the purpose of this is, like mentioned, is to provide the precise locations of the moorings. So, to begin, the field work of the moorings was collected using the latitude and longitude GPS coordinates. The latitude and longitude were gathered using a Trimble GPS unit, which is a device used to collect the data. In order to get the precise locations of each mooring, the data was collected during high tide, which is when there's no movement in the tidal stream in either direction. This allowed us to gather a more precise locations of the moorings, as the moorings chains were mostly vertically straight. And this was because with it was not influenced with the low and high tidal movement water. This lack water allowed us to be more directly on top of the moorings in order to get a more precise locations of the moorings. This was done by going to each buoy's mooring and stopping for a couple seconds to get the latitude and longitude coordinates with the GPS device used. In the maps I will show you shortly, you will be able to visualize why this factor was important in the data collection. The data collected was then transferred to ArcGIS, the online mapping tool that was used to create the map and database layer. With ArcGIS, I was able to create a feature class and a database for the moorings of the harbor. With the ArcGIS, I was able to display all the precise locations of the mooring, and I will show you the maps. So as you can see here, this was the Trimble GPS device that was used. Oh, I apologize about that. As you can see here, this Trimble is the GPS device that was used to collect the data, and this is the ArcGIS software that was used in order to create the database layer. And as you can see, this is the main map that has pointed out the moorings, which are seen in the green dots. And the red outline outlines the mooring boundary. And it's also kind of hard to see in this big map, but there are certain markers here that I have broken down the map in showing a closer view for this project. So as you can see here, the moorings are between the markers 12 and 14, displays the moorings between this area. And as I was mentioning earlier, the reason that the data was collected during high tide was in order to get an accurate locations of the moorings to not be influenced by the tidal streams. As you can see here, the locations gathered are in the green dots, and this database layer from ArcGIS was captured probably during a low or high tide period and shows the boats a little bit off of the locations that was collected. In this map, you can see the moorings between the markers channels 14 and 16, which incorporates these moorings right here. And this one incorporates the moorings from the markers 14 to 16 between here. And lastly, we have the towards the end of the moorings, we have the sections of moorings. So like I previously mentioned, the map layer of the moorings can be incorporated to the city's geo database and serve as a data management tool for the city or for the harbor advisory board. With this map layer created contains the latitude, longitude, and height informations of the moorings, and additional information can be added on to by the city and include information such as the type of boat, if it's either a power boat or a sailboat, and further information such as the length of the boat and the name of the boat. This database incorporated into the geo database also has the potential to be used for other purposes, such as during the biannual inspections, any code enforcement, and possibly facilities maintenance. The data available in the city's geo database can also serve many different functions that the city or the Morro Bay Advisory Board seems best suited. With that being said, this concludes the Morro Bay Mooring Field Mapping Project, and I wanted to thank all of you for your time, and I wanted to take a minute to acknowledge Ron Reisner for all of his support throughout the field collection and his wonderful boat rides and his help in putting this presentation together. I also wanted to take a moment to thank the Cal Poly Natural Resources and Environmental Science Department for supporting me and providing me with the necessary hardware and software, and also two additional professors who have helped me along the process, Dr. Chu and Dr. Verma. I can now answer any questions you may have, or you can also reach me out via email. Thank you.
Katie, thank you so very much. Please stay at the podium, and we'll start down at Bill's end. Bill, any questions or comments for Katie?
No, thank you very much. It was very informative.
Thank you.
Dana?
Yeah, I was thinking about what you were talking about using the high tide. Maybe a question for Gene just for a second. The bottom chain, how long is the bottom chain? Is that at high tide, are they all the same, or is that going to change things?
The requirements are that it would be a 3-to-1 scope. and that's using measures at about a 3 foot tide, 3 foot elevation of tide. So, and my average of the depth of water is somewhere around 20 feet throughout the bay. So if it's A squared plus B squared plus C squared equals, anyways, right triangle, it's about 60 feet of chain. 40 feet of it would be on the bottom chain, and 20 feet would be on the top chain.
So then the last flow, as the tide is coming in, the chain could be dragging in that direction. And then, so I'm just curious, is this something for you? Because I'm looking at you as someone who would use this information possibly, but...
It'll be a good basis to start.
Right, okay.
From.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah?
I don't have any questions, but thank you for doing this. I think it'll be a great tool.
Lynn?
Yes, when will this information be available to the public?
I can provide the data information to the city at the start of next week, and then I can also make it public at that point.
And we could get in touch with you directly and for email or something, or will it be available in what form?
Most online? Definitely. I can leave you my information and any format that you guys would benefit most out of. I can get the data out.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you very much. I'm sure it's going to be very helpful to the Harbor Department.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And my question is, how does somebody revise this data? If a boat moves or mooring gets moved, how does that information get revised?
With ArcGIS, there is a feature class created that can be edited. So if any additional information it needs to be added or changed, it can be done so through ArcGIS.
So we could give this information to the Harbor Department and they can revise it?
Yes, definitely.
If I may. So when at the very beginning of this project, we contacted the Community Development Department and inquired as to the nature of the city's... Katie, I'm going to look to you for help. What does the city use? What's their program? Do you recall?
I think you're talking about ArcGIS.
Beyond that.
Purposes again?
Okay, so we determined that the work product that Katie is producing can be read into the city's mapping program. So moving forward, I think that once the city incorporates Katie's data into their data, then the way to update it would be through the city's mapping program.
Yeah, and the layer can be added onto whatever the city already has established and can be edited from there as well.
Neil? Sure.
Would it be possible, just thinking of a future tool within the GIS program, to, if you wanted to get to optimize that field, you have the boundaries going around, would there be any function within your program that could optimize the layout of those green dots? So you could essentially come as a consultant and say, if this is where you placed all the dots, you would be maximizing your field and could possibly fit more moorings?
Yeah, you can definitely rearrange kind of like the boundary of the mooring area, and as well like rearrange if like the moorings were moved in the future, they can be like updated as well.
Okay. Thanks.
Bill?
Yeah, following up on that question that came to my mind, since you've done this research and you're out there, do you think that the city could add more moorings within the boundary area and have more than 125 since you've done this research?
Based on my observations out there and seeing the moorings, if it was rearranged in a different manner than it currently is, I believe it could have the potential to occupy additional moorings, definitely.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else?
Can I ask a couple questions?
Of course.
Katie, first, thank you very much for doing this.
Thank you.
Maybe I missed it when you introduced yourself. A few questions. What is your major?
I am an environmental management protection major.
Okay, and hopefully you found this useful to your studies and you gained and maybe even got some credit for it?
Definitely. This is part of my senior project as well.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. And I can also provide any additional GIS work if it is needed.
I think we need to take more advantage. I know community development uses Cal Poly interns pretty regular. We've never been able to enable ourselves to it. We need to more.
It's Katie, a great came, resource. Katie came to us through a friend of the Harbor Advisory Board who was in the audience this evening. One of Katie's professors, Priya Verma, has made the facilitated Katie working with us. So thank you, Priya. Thank you very much. Yeah.
I may be misinformed, but I believe that there's either a city ordinance or somewhere that says no new moorings shall be allowed in Morro Bay. So I believe it'll take a city council resolution to change that number. But that's up to Eric.
I don't know. You may be correct. There could be some old 1970s ordinance, but because at the time they filled things out pretty thoroughly and before it was regulated, it was kind of a free-for-all, and then the city finally managed it and established a fee and said, here's how many there are, so it may take some action.
For what it's worth, we noticed a couple of pretty big holes when we were out there. Lynn?
If you start talking about the location of moorings, if you really wanted to increase the number of moorings, could you not do it by changing the method of moorings and using the, I don't know what they really call it, bungee cords? That have the advantage of not scouring the bottom as they pull the chain around and go pretty much.
We need to agendize this.
Oh.
In order to have a fruitful conversation.
Okay. If I may make one other comment,
sure.
Since somebody else brought up the fact of moving or adding moorings, it's not just the mooring and the location of the mooring, but the boat that is on it that determines where or how many can go into a particular space, and the kind of boat makes a big difference.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, anything else for Katie? Katie, good job.
Thank you.
Good job. From start to finish, good job.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ron.
I'm just delighted that you did this for us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, now. Now we can go to B1, unless the director has something else.
No, just trying to follow the script. So I'm standard update. I'm inclined to start, and I think I will start. I'm going to take some executive privilege here, and I think I'm going to start with the item further down on the list. It's in the update, the status report. On our sea line dock, pretty important project that we've had. As you know, we've got our floating dock out on the north end of the anchorage area that over the last 5 to 7, maybe more years, has been taken over by sea lines to the point of it becoming unusable for boats, which has been a problem for my revenues, but not for the visitation and the opportunity that it provides for viewing animals up close. And so it's gotten to the point of, I mean, it was pretty old and in need of repair before the sea lions took to it. But now that they've taken to it for as many years as they have, they've pretty much destroyed it. So not really having funding to fund this project in the current year's budget or potentially even into future budgets, as we may learn in our budget item later with revenues a little on the short side, the Friends of the Harbor Department undertook a funding program to seek donations, and I'm going to turn it over to Bill here for a second. We looked initially, I think, for about $10,000, our estimated cost. And Bill, you want to kind of lay out the financial outlook?
Yeah, thank you very much, Eric. To date, we have raised $23,466. To date, we've spent $24,850. So we are a little short. We still have to purchase maybe a little bit more nuts and bolts and the plaques, which are very important for the donors. So realistically, we're about $2,000 short in our project. Now, It would be nice if we could generate that money, and because this is really restricted funds, but the general fund of the Friends does have the money to cover that. So we have the Kite Festival. We're the underwriter for the Kite Festival, so any proceeds will also be donated for the Sea Lion Dock. But so we've really pretty much spent and raised almost double what we intended to. One of the main reasons was is through Ron's recommendation, and I think rightfully a good one, we had to change the material, and that added approximately $7,000 to $8,000 worth of cost. Eric can go in the details. We're pretty much almost done with all three docks. We're just basically getting the plaques done, informing the donors. Because we also purchased a viewing station that we're going to put between Anderson's Hotel and the Hofbräu, and it will be a free viewing station that we purchased. That you can see the docks. You'll see, you know, everything else too, but it's just another added touch. We did have one individual family that donated $10,000, and that particular viewing station will be specifically donated in their memory. So that's the financials so far, and we'll give you an update as we proceed. We kind of look at we're going to do a dedication ceremony probably sometime in the first weeks of May. That's my guess. It just is. We just got to get everything organized and making sure that we get the plaques. And Eric has a good view of the way the plaques are going to be performed. Now, you're not going to be able to see them from the shore, but if you're up there in the kayak, you'll be able to see the plaques. So I thank you, everyone who did donate, and hopefully we can still get a few extra dollars in here to help pay for the whole thing. Thanks, Eric.
Bill, before you hand it back to Eric, if folks would like to donate to this particular cause, and as you said, the donation funds were restricted for this purpose.
Correct. You go on to Friends of the Morro Bay Harbor Department .org. We have a special tab specifically for the Sea Lion Docks. You donate that, or you click that, and you can donate the money right then and there.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Bill. So I'll just add on and fill in some gaps and some things. So initially, like I said, we did this fundraising effort, and it's been great. And adding, as Bill said, putting in plastic lumber for the decking because it's going to be much longer lasting and solve a few problems out there, which added cost. Sought donations, $1,000 or more, we get a plaque. Plaque is basically going to be a small sign out on the dock itself, on the three pilings that are out there, wrapped around the piling with the name on there. I'll read the names here in a minute of who's donated. I'm not going to go. Most of them are in memory of type things, sort of like the benches, plaques you see. So I'm not going to go into the detail on those, but I'd like to give the folks that have donated their due kudos there and thank them for what they've done. The dock, like I said, it's essentially built. We built it in three sections. It's pretty much an exact replacement of what's out there, but built stronger with more flotation and more robustly, and again hinged so it'll have a little more. All right, we got an extra visitor. Hinged so it'll have a little more life, hopefully, with the weight being added to it, with the sea lines being unevenly weighted. As Bill said, we're purchasing a set of those. Sort of, I guess, I think of them as, you know, top of the Empire State Building viewing binoculars, except you don't have to put a nickel or a quarter or anything in to make them work. They're going to be free. Mounted on the street end dock there. So you may be able to read the names with those, depending on what kind of power we put on them. And so we'll be putting it out there. I think we're probably going to put the dock out there and just tie it up to the side of the existing one to get the sea lines to get used to it. What we'd hate to have happen if all of a sudden we pull the old dock out and, you know, obviously the sea lines are going to have to go away for a while. And then we put the new one in and they don't recognize it for some reason, decide they don't want to be there anymore. So we're going to have to probably work with Fish and Wildlife folks and maybe Pacific Wildlife Care and just get their take on it and make sure we're making it a smooth transition. So that'll be happening sometime here in the springtime. I'll read off the list of the donors and thank them again. I'd be remiss to also not thank Jeremiah Jacobs, my Harbor Patrol officer. He's our most junior, our most recent Harbor Patrol officer. I guess he's probably been with us 2 or 3 years now. Came to us through our lifeguard program. He also built that little shed on our dock that we store our Harbor Patrol gear in. So he took this on when we threw it out there to the cadre to see who wanted to take it on. And he's done a great job. He's built it out at the yard, and we'll be launching it off of our trailers in the launch ramp. So thanks again to Jeremiah for what he's done. For the donors, again, these are all, I'm not going to list how much they donated either. I think a lot of them wanted to kind of stay private, but they would like to recognize them for their donations. And again, most of these are in memory of or in recognition of, but I'll just read the donors. John Caldwell, Dr. Catherine, and I'll apologize if I butcher any names, Dr. Catherine Woolner Thomas, Elizabeth Curran, Nancy Walter, Amity Perry Boda, B.Y. Leekert Trust, Sharon and Stephen Peck, and Kevin Winfield from Subsea Tours. They were our donors, so thank them again for everything they've done.
Clarify, they weren't all the donors. They were just the donors that donated over $1,000, which will enable them to have a plaque. We did get some other donations in the form of $10. We had a little story here. We had a liveaboard, from what I understand. You probably know him better there, but she is about 13, I think, or 14, and she went around to businesses, and she loves the sea lions, and she raised $115 and gave it to us. You know, so we've had more of a grassroots support on that, and so again, I thank you so much.
Eric, I've got one quick question. When was the floating dock originally installed? Do you know?
Late 80s or early 90s.
So it's getting close to 40 years.
About 1991, 92, somewhere through there.
Okay.
And it's original. We've done some repairs to it over the years, but it's pretty much original as installed. I know it we had to go either re-drive or re-jet in piles at some point. I don't know if you're involved in that. We had some dredging that ended up dredging fairly close, and pilings all tipped over when they kind of got undermined. So I think we had to either put in new piles or re-drive and get them in deeper at one point. Any other questions on that? Okay, moving on to the remainder of the status report. Harbor Department activity from the last meeting in early March. We've had 10 emergency responses, 108 calls for service, 37 assists of other agencies, 35 enforcement actions, and 8 weather warnings, and 1 hazardous bar posting. 8 weather warnings are probably gale or small craft advisories, and hazardous bar is when the entrance is breaking, obviously, and having only one of those through March. As you know, March can be a kind of a transition month, but between dredging and having a pretty mild winter, we've been pretty lucky in the harbor entrance. On March 10th, the city of Morro Bay was proclaimed as the Rescue Watercraft Training Capital of the World by the Rescue Watercraft Association. This dedication was included in a conference that has taken place for several years here now in Morro Bay. It's now being called RescueCon. Basically, the water rescue agencies, mainly headed up by K-38, who's Sean Eladio and our training partner that has been training us since we started that program over 15 years ago. She's a part and parcel of the Rescue Watercraft Association, and she's pretty well moved her operations here, and we have boating and waterways training courses here. So due to our location, kind of centrally located in California, and our weather conditions, which can be rough but not excessively rough like you get in Northern California, but not calmer like you get in Southern California, this has become an ideal training ground for watercraft rescue training for agencies not just around the country and the state, but around the world. We had folks from Portugal, Italy, Brazil, number of countries, I think even Russia over the last couple of years, come to this conference. So it's been a great boon, just not for us from a training standpoint, having all these resources here, but for the folks to be able to come here and train on our water ground. So, and that proclamation was made for the City Council as well on March 10th. So I want to thank the association for that. On the 15th, we led a water safety awareness meeting for boating groups and businesses in the waters around Morro Bay. This started several years ago. We would annually bring in the kayak rental agencies and just touch bases with them and reiterate what our safety concerns are and what our concerns are with their rentals and how to interact with them when they have problems with either losing folks to weather out on the bay or if folks end up showing up late. So it's kind of grown a little bit, and now we've expanded it onto other boating groups. So had members from the Coast Guard and Fish and Wildlife for wildlife awareness, and the state parks folks there for best practices around marine wildlife primarily. The otters have been an animal of concern in recent months because people love to just paddle right up to them, and believe it or not, they even try to pet them. So just try and give them a little more education and make sure that our rental folks and others are passing that on to their customers. On the 15th, we responded to a call to the Coast Guard of a 42-foot pleasure boat that was lost power right at the South Jetty. It's uncanny, but when boats lose power or steering, it seems like more often than not, it's right in the mouth. It's right in the jaws when it's critical that you have power and steering. And this boat, sure enough, lost power. Luckily, Harbor Patrol Officer Mather was right there on the docks, was able to jump in the boat, and he had a couple Coast Guard kids right there on the docks as well and grabbed them, and they went and pulled the boat safely inside the harbor. He was only about 50 feet outside the surf and 100 feet south of the South Jetty, which has been a pretty common place for accidents, so that was a good ending on that one. On the 21st, we responded to a staff report of 415. That's police talk for a disturbance on the waterfront. Being obviously as close as we are to the waterfront, being on the waterfront with medical and other emergencies, we're typically the first ones there, so we respond to these types of things. We locate a suspect who ended up jumping over into the water to try and flee the police department. Probably not the best strategy in the world. So we let him sit in the water for a while and cool off, and then he ended up being helped out at the Marina Square dock at the Dos Osos. Police department took him into custody and did what they normally do with folks like that. On the 22nd, we responded to mutual aid for a flooding incident out on Highway 41 at a couple of the trailer parks. That was the day we had that heavy rain. I think we had 5 inches in one day. Luckily, there wasn't a lot of wind with that storm, so we on the bay was relatively calm. So we had personnel that were able to assist the fire department, and we set up a water safety group on the bridge at Main Street and Morrow Creek, and because there was flooding going on into the trailer parks nearby there, and fortunately it receded, the rain receded, and the floodwaters receded as well, but we stood by for assistance with the fire department, which is good. And fortunately, I don't think any real permanent damage was done in that trailer park. The rainfall was about 5 1/4 inches, so we're up to just over 12 inches now, and hopefully we'll see a little more tomorrow night, right? A little more rain coming. Sea Lion Dock, we covered that. Recent council activity. On the March 13th meeting, City Council did an initial review of the mid-year budget performance and status report, adopted a resolution authorizing additional budget adjustments from the Harbor Fund. We put another $20,000 into the ice machine capital fund to help ongoing maintenance issues there, and we did some adjustments to some of our revenues and expenses to account for changes in real time that have occurred since the budget was adopted. So that occurred on the 13th. On March 27th, the council authorized entering into another DBW abandoned boat grant. It's called SAVE, Stranded and Abandoned Vessel Exchange Grant, for $16,100. This is the second grant we've gotten in this budget cycle. We got an initial grant of, I think, $25,000 that we spent, and DBW had some excess funding left, and so we took advantage of that. So we've got another $16,100, which is probably, for the most part, already spent because we've got some boats lined up to get rid of. And we'll be applying for another grant come April, which is now, for the next grant cycle. In addition to the March 27th meeting, the council adopted Resolution 1418 approving a conditional use permit for the House of Juju lease site, which is completion of the project that was started there probably 5 or 6 years ago with an initial small remodel that was eventually going to tear the whole place down. Well, they decided not to tear it down and basically took it down to the studs, redid all the interior and exterior, and now they're completing it out. The final part of the project is making a better connection between Anchor Memorial Park walkway and the walkway, harbor walk going behind the building along the rest of the waterfront, taking their trash cans from the walkway on the water and putting them in enclosure alongside the building. The western side of the building, it's really just storage and interior office space now, is going to be converted over to restaurant use, and they'll move the office elsewhere and then redo the walkway in the back and have a little bit of seating out back as well. So that'll be a good project once that's completed. And some piling repairs on their overhang because they've got some piling and revetment work to do as well. And finally, on the 27th, we updated the council on our D.C. week with CMAQ, Washington, D.C. week. Good meetings there. That was March, I want to say, 6th to the 8th or 6th to the 9th. Met with Congressman Carver Hall, had a good meeting with him. This year we had five folks go with the group. It wasn't just myself and the mayor. It was myself, the mayor, the city manager, Councilman Heading, and the public services director. Met with staff from both our senatorial representatives as well. Met with BOEM, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, over the Trident Wind Project. Met with a couple other congressmen. Interestingly, the resolution or the vote we passed to support the Working Waterfront Bill back from Congresswoman Pingree in Maine. We met with her and her staff and kind of met an interesting sort of parallel universe over there with we were telling them, you know, what our issues are and the things we're facing, and they're like, hey, that's the same things we're facing. So made some good contact there that we hope to build on over the years and hopefully not just, you know, be working with our California folks as we typically do in D.C., but start working with the folks on the East Coast because at least in the commercial fishing world, we're all facing the same issues. So that was a great meeting there. And then met with a couple of other congressional representatives, of course, Corps of Engineers. A lot of changes in the Corps civilian ranks as well as the enlisted ranks. So spent a good amount of time with the Corps just telling them who we are as individual harbors and what we do rather than them going through the usual budget process. So all in all, it was a good week of meetings, good 3-4 days of solid meetings. Again, made some new relationships that we hope to foster. And all in all, I think it was well worth the time of all us being there. City manager, public works director, and Councilman Heading were there primarily to work on the wharf project, the water reclamation facility project, and seek funding and see what it takes to go after the grant and loan funds, federal grant and loan funds for that project. So they went to EPA as well and a few other places. So kind of a dual-purpose trip, but I think all in all, we had some good meetings over there. Any questions on all that stuff? Dana?
Did you get any status as far as any movement on the bill that's introduced by the senator from Maine?
The Working Waterfront bill? It's still alive. It's I don't recall exactly what committee it was in. We, as you recall, we recommended a change. I think the council did as well. We put that in front of the council to make the program available not just to states as it is now with quote-unquote working waterfront plans, approved working waterfront plans, but to other smaller local agencies as well. And the congresswoman was very receptive to that, and I think she's heard that before because it didn't seem like that was new to her. So we'll be keeping track of that, and we let our congressmen and senators know that we support that bill as well, so hopefully they'll be able to pick that up on their radar screen as that process moves forward.
Eric, I just had one question. You did mention you spent $20,000 on a maintenance project on the ice machine. Was that a project recently finished, or is that one of the projects that were completed?
That is, so I have $10,000 in my approved budget for ice machine maintenance in this fiscal year's budget. I asked for an additional $20,000. That was before we got the grant from the cable committee for $100,000 to completely rebuild the refrigeration system. But I anticipate I'll leave that $30,000 in there to take care of some past bills that we're still resolving and future maintenance on other stuff as time goes on. But the $100,000 cable grant is going to give us some huge relief because that replaces the whole refrigeration system, which has been the bane of that machine's existence kind of since day one, especially recently.
Yeah, I was kind of directing my question. I was just curious as to whether it was an additional piece of maintenance, unscheduled maintenance, the $20,000.
Yeah, I guess I could characterize it that way. It's several pieces of additional maintenance. That, as you probably know, another compressor completely died, and they're only working on one right now, and so there's been additional cost.
Right. Okay, is there any more movement on the possibility of replacing all of that equipment?
Oh, well, I'm anticipating we'll get it done. I've just got to put together the project and work with the Fisherman's Org and Santa Monica Seafood and see how we're going to put it together. I met with Bill Blue a couple of times, one over in the cable office, and he came to my office again a couple of weeks ago, and we kind of talked process on that as well since he's on the cable committee. So I just need to start getting it.
All righty, good deal.
Getting it going.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. The fishing front, I think, Jeremiah, you pretty much covered most of that with rockfish opener and tiny little salmon season. Not much else to report there in terms of fishing other than the rock fishing has been great. Typically is when the season opens and nobody's been fishing for months. Upcoming events, and some of these will be repeats, the citywide yard sale. Ron, you brought that up. And then the cleanup week afterwards. So what you don't sell, you can get rid of afterwards. Spring cleanup week, April 9 to 13. You can call Morbid Garbage for more information. You can go to their website or go to the city's website. They're giving you additional, basically you take away big stuff. If you really large things, I think you got to pay an additional $10 for extremely bulky items. But it's the week to put out all your big stuff and get rid of all the things that you can't get rid of at the garage sale. So that's April 4th through 13. And then April 7th is the Rock Radio Station 97.3 5th Annual Fundraiser Concert at the Morro Bay Vets Hall. You can go to www.esterobayradio.org for more information on that. Morro Bay Yacht Club opening day. Dana, did you bring that up? No, if you did. April 15th. So another great event on the 15th. April 21st, the Family Care Network Miracle Mile for Kids, 15th annual. That's the run from the Mora Rock all the way down to Cayucas Pier. And April 22, I think, Jeremiah, you brought up the Blessing of the Fleet at the North T Pier, another great event, followed by the lunch afterwards. April 27th and 29th is the Kite Festival, being sponsored by the Friends of the Morro Bay Harbor Department. It seems like the Friends have taken over sponsorship of all things Festivus lately, which is great. So they'll be taking on a good part of that. May 3rd through May 6th is the 22nd Cruisin' Morro Bay Car Show, the car show that goes up on Morro Bay Boulevard, basically probably from the maybe up by the mobile station all the way down through Dorns. And great show, a lot of cars, a lot of people come for that. It's become kind of a signature event for the city and has been for a long time. May 19th through 25th is National Safe Boating Week. We'll probably be putting together some events for that on Safe Boating Day. May 26th to the 28th is Morro Bay Memorial Day, so that's Memorial Day weekend, Art in the Park at City Park up in Morro Bay Boulevard. And then finally July 14th through the 18th is the July 14th is the 49th annual Brian Waterbury Rock to Pier Run, so that's the city's version of the run and half marathon from Mora Rock over to the pier. Down to the status of the pending HAB recommendations. Not a lot to update. Item number three.
Bill. One thing that was brought up in our meeting earlier today is the iguana will be here. The dredger, I think. What did I say?
The iguana is the name.
will be here, and I think that's a worthwhile thing to mention.
You're correct. Thank you for that. The Aquina, the core ship's dredge.
Yeah.
The core's dredge ship will be here. I wish I had the dates, but I want to say it's early May. They've got 20 days total, which they lose about 3 to 4 days in transit, unfortunately, from Portland and back. Fortunately, knock on wood, due to the nature of this winter, there's not been a lot of infill. So they've gotten less funding than most years. This year they've only gotten $2.2 million. Typically it's about $3 million. But again, hopefully that's enough to take care of, plus the dredging that got completed earlier over the last year by OTNA. We're in pretty good shape. The Corps is funded for next year, for FY19, so they'll come next spring to the tune of $2.4 million. So again, a little less than hoped for. But Congress looks like they do, at least in the President's initial budget, have some extra money to play with the Corps, and so hopefully some of these projects, including ours, will get plussed up. Thank you, Bill. So again, back to the chart on the pending HAB recommendations. Number three, that one's taken off. That was State Park Marina. relative to dredging and piggybacking with the Corps, which couldn't happen for a number of regulatory environmental reasons. Item number five.
Eric, before you move through, can you just briefly tell us whether there's anything new on one and two?
One and two, with one, that's getting back and re-engage with state parks. We're still trying to work on getting a meeting with the local district director, manager, superintendent, to get with them and get with the folks in Sacramento, because some personnel have changed in Sacramento, some key personnel in Sacramento have changed, so haven't been having a lot of luck with that, maybe largely due to the budgeting process, which is now.
But my specific question is relates to number one. I mean, the last entry that we have is dated February 23rd, where a new parks concession specialist was contacted by the Harbor Department. So have they responded to that contact?
I'm going to lean over to Lori. Lori, you had last spoken. No, we've made no, have been able to so, make no movement with parks.
So on behalf of the board, what I would ask is that in the status category for each one of these, if we could get a monthly update, and if that monthly update is no movement, no progress, no response, whatever it might be, that would we'd all appreciate that, I think.
Okay.
Likewise, number two, last entry is January 18th.
That's our ongoing rules and regs stuff. I think we've gone through it all. I'm building that into the final product to get in front of the council, which I'm hoping to do.
So is the Harbor Advisory Board, from your perspective, and we all appreciate the fact that we're given the opportunity to respond to you and that you helped us put it on the agenda. Are we done with that for now?
Yeah, you may be done with it forever.
Okay, then
well, not forever, but that box may be checked off and done as far as the HAB's concerned.
Good. So let's strike that item.
Okay. I don't think I'll be needing to bring anything back to the HAB, but I'm going to reserve the right to in case I do.
Oh well, it would be a new agenda item as opposed to just some of the ongoing process?
No, it could be ongoing. It'd be the same project if I need to bring it.
Then let's add an entry that says, with a current date, that says, you're good for now. Please.
Okay.
And number four?
So three, we struck four. RFP, Boatyard Marine Services Facility. Get out in front of the city council and get to the public. It's work in progress. Working on trying to put together an RFP. That one goes on to the next page. I brought something back to you in January to incorporate into the RFP, so I've got everything I need from the HAB. Right now I just need to complete my RFP, get it out and get in front of the city council for them to see if they're going to approve issuing it.
Okay. So for the May meeting, if we could add a sentence that says just that, that would be great.
Item five, as you know, and we couldn't get this as part of the working waterfront update, but we had the joint HAB and PC meeting, as most of you know, that were there on the 22nd of March, and we went through our list of recommendations and materials we were wanting to forward into the GPLCP update process, and the HAB and PC were pretty harmonious in coming up with overall recommendations to forward into that process. So I think in terms of the HAB and PC's concern and that dual subcommittee, our boxes are all checked on that, and that item is done.
Yeah, we'll have a committee report on that tonight.
Okay. Item six.
But your point's well taken, that once the committee report is offered tonight, we can scrub that item.
Yeah, I think. Unless there's something. I mean, there'll be opportunity as the GPLCP process moves through the rest of its public venue that other opportunities for us to comment if we need to or if we see the need. So the
The committee will stay will stay intact and until the GPLCP update is completed. But we can close out that as an action on the pending list. We can close it out as an action item.
Yep. Item six.
So we got a report tonight.
I'll be giving more of a report tonight on that one, on cost allocation, where we're at with that. Item seven. Should the city share TOT sales tax and possessor interest revenue with the Harbor Fund? We've contacted the State Lands Commission, and the word back is, again, what's there from last October. This one could be a scratch it off the list. It's normal that those funds don't go to the Tidelands Trust Enterprise funds under which they live.
Yeah, unless you advise me not to do so, acting for the Harbor Advisory Board, I'm going to ask the city manager to provide us with a memorandum on that item.
Sure.
That, so we can close it out.
Okay. Item eight. Eelgrass, I can give an update. I've spoken to Anchor QA. I'll give the update when we get to the Eelgrass Ad Hoc Committee on that one. There's nothing I need to add on this one. And that includes item number nine. Item number 10, that's Working Waterfront. Measure D stuff that we will cover during that report more thoroughly. As well as item number 11. Right, those are all blended together, yep. And item 12, paid parking be established on and around the Embarcadero. The only thing really the new that's happened there, we made our recommendations in terms of should paid parking be considered on and around the Morro Bay waterfront. Here's what we recommend you look at and for and consider. We forwarded that on to the city manager and community development director. Community Development Director will put our recommendations into the process when Planning Commission and other bodies see that. They haven't considered it yet. The update I have is that in order to look at this year's budget and look for ways to either save money or generate extra revenues because of the city's current financial situation, and not just the general fund but the Harbor Fund as well, we're pretty stressed. Finance director put basically comment boxes in all departments for soliciting input from not just the public but from all employees, their ideas on generating revenue or cutting costs. And there's been a committee put together of city employees from across departments and across bargaining units to look at all those ideas, and they've taken a number of them and said, no, we're not going to even look at that, and reasons why, and there's still a number in the of them that are still under consideration. And there's, from the many different fronts, people recommended paid parking in and around not just Embarcadero but in the city. So that one's may get traction in this budget process this year as we move forward trying to figure out how to balance a budget. Any other questions on any of those? That concludes my report.
Okay, thank you. Item C1, update from the Marine Services Facility Boatyard Ad Hoc Committee on the committee's and staff's recent activities, and a presentation and have input relative to a draft triangle lot boat storage policy and agreement, or the documents thereof. So, staff report to introduce it, please.
Yeah, so from
hang,
the...
Hang
from
on
the
a second. Hang just a second. Danny, you had something on your mind?
No. Go ahead. I just thought I was going to give a short report.
You are.
Oh. Thanks.
Go ahead.
You bet. But we're given that we have all this other document, all this other information tonight, I thought we'd let staff introduce it and then...
As far as the committee report goes.
Well, hang on a second. So unless you'd like to go first, you're welcome to go first.
Okay. Usually there's no other people talking. It's just an ad hoc committee.
Okay. Anyways, yes, we did have a meeting on March 19th, and members Lexi Bell from the National Oceanary Program, Jeremiah O'Brien, Ron Reisner, and Harbor Director Eric Endersby and myself were in attendance. And Alan Allward gave us some information via email for some of our discussions. Notable discussions that we had were regarding what we're talking about tonight as far as the boat storage and also the RFP. Ron, would you like to comment on the RFP, some of our suggestions, since you did most of the talking on that?
If I could recall, and you even prompted me. Thank you for that. I did not bring my notes with me. I apologize.
Maybe Eric can fill us in on. We gave you some suggestions.
We did. And I appreciate the opportunity.
So now you're going to throw me into the bus?
Well,
you know what?
I didn't bring my notes either.
You know what happens?
It's written down somewhere.
You know what happens to it? It runs downhill.
And I know you're working on it, and we have a lot of other things to talk about, so if you don't want to get into it, it's fine with me right now.
Like Ron, I don't have all my notes in front of me, so
okay.
I'm guessing.
But
so, anyways.
Reasonable question. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I remember there was a couple comments about how you have dealt with RFPs a lot, and you did have some good conversation about that. It was just actually really good to get together and go over where we have, what's been going on, what hasn't been going on, and like this item tonight, this is a big part of the facility, is the boat storage. To me, this is the beginning of the whole facility. So I will hand it back to staff.
Which I do have information for. So one of our goal objective work items is research and bring to council for consideration fee-based RV and or boat trailer storage parking in a portion of the Triangle lot until some permanent use is allocated to that location. So back in September, at our September HAB meeting, we provided a staff report on this item and got input relative to this goal item and brought that forward to the City Council on February 13th for consideration. The Council was generally in favor of vessel-only storage in the lot. They specifically said no to RVs, which I think was sort of the general sentiment here as well, or at least only RVs if and when the boat demand was sated. But Council didn't want any kind of RV storage. They thought boat-only down there, and that it's what the zoning is down there, waterfront or water dependent or marine dependent, lends itself to boats as well instead of RVs. So, but again, council is generally in favor, although they wanted a few more things looked at until before we brought it back to them for reconsideration. One was reassess the staff proposed revenue sharing. We, of course, proposed an 80-20 revenue share, which we thought was fair. Some of the public, another comment was, including from the council, maybe 50-50 should be more fair. Based on who owns the property and how it came into the city's ownership. The next item B on my list, is some level of funding to go back into the facility and or improvements in the area, whether that be, you know, pavement or lighting or just general upkeep. Item number C, more detail on security, lighting, and fencing. They just wanted to know a little bit more exactly what we were proposing. Item D, consideration of moving the Great American Fish Company and Harbor Hut trash dumpster enclosures, which is right outside of our yard, harbor storage yard, and kind of now in the middle of the Maritime Museum and Native American area that the Maritime Museum is going to set up right next to it. So moving the trash enclosure area out of there into a less conspicuous location. And item E, bring back some policy and procedure to implement and manage the facility. And so that's what the council wanted to see. So I want to bring back to you those five items. From a staff standpoint, if general fund wanted more than 80-20, how about 50-50? With all management and maintenance being covered first, I think, before the revenue would be split. Obviously, we're going to have to manage it from a staff standpoint of collecting revenues and enforcing on any issues that come up. So that's what we'd recommend on that.
Before you move on from that one, just a point of clarification. In the in the staff description of under discussion of item one, what, please, is the definition in this particular case of the word capital?
Capital is infrastructure.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep. So from a, again, from a revenue standpoint, 50-50 revenue split between general fund and harbor fund, but also administrative costs being shared equally as well, since I think the HAB's recommendation was the harbor department manage it, and I think the council was okay with that as well, so that's what we'd recommend bringing back. I want to take your input on that. Item number two.
Eric, let's do these one at a time.
Okay.
So we.
Okay.
Let's do them one at a time.
Sure.
So I'm going to take comment from the board on discussion item number one. Gene, starting your end.
At some point, we're going to need, I mean, might, if we're going to have public comment.
You're absolutely correct.
Mr. Martini.
Thank you.
Do you intend to provide public comment?
So this on this particular agenda item,
correct. If I remember right, the city council stated that they wanted they would pay the harbor to manage, but all the funds would actually go back into supporting the actual parking, you know, the lot itself. So I think if there was any 50-50 split at the time, if I remember correctly, they weren't talking 50-50. It was still not locked in cement. They're talking about paying the harbor fair market value to manage it, but then any profit up and above would stay in a special fund to actually finance improvements on the parking lot. Just to kind of, if that's my recollection, but that was just my comment on that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Martin. Gene?
Well, seeing how Morro Bay is a boating community, my recommendation would be 75% for the harbor department and 25% for general fund.
Jeremiah?
Yeah, I agree with the split gene aforementioned there, but I don't know if we have a question on that or not.
This is a comment. This is a commentary. Lynn?
Ditto.
Neil?
I agree to that split as well, and I can give, I mean, if there are that many more boats being stored down there, other than just managing it, the waterfront will have a higher impact and more usage, so I think that those funds should be granted towards to the waterfront for the Harbor District.
Dana?
Yeah, why is it 50-50? If before we were looking at 80-20, is there a reason why 50-50 was
did council give you a reason?
It was mainly the ownership. I mean, it's not in the Titans Trust. It was mainly the ownership of the property.
Dan? Well, I agree that should be more to the Harbor Department for the purpose that it's being used. The exact amount, I'm not sure about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, from a strictly selfish harbor viewpoint, if all I'm doing is managing and getting paid to manage it and everything else just goes back into it, what's the point?
Right.
It's not some sort of a revenue source. I mean, it's
no, and then, you know, the 10% going into it, that's the next item. But, yeah, all these things have to come into factor. So I would agree with my fellow board members that it should be heavily favored towards the Harbor Department.
So I have you down as majority,
yes.
A majority of?
Yes.
Okay. Bill?
I would concur on the 75-25% split to be a fair split.
So relative to the split, I have a comment. It can't be a question because we don't have counsel here to answer the question. But my question or my comment is that if the Harbor Department is going to administer the lot from its budget, its operating budget, and if the balance of it was to go to the city general fund, and let's presume that that's 50% just for a moment hypothetically, And given that city departments other than the Harbor Department have the personnel and the equipment to maintain and improve that lot, for instance, it was graded not terribly long ago by another harbor, by another city department, then if council were to agree that the improvements and the maintenance would come out of the general fund, then 25% may or may not be enough to do that. I don't know. I don't have enough information. I'm not informed on that. I appreciate the director's point, the Harbor director's point, which is, okay, I mean, where's the beef? I mean, if we're going to do all this, and the whole idea was to generate revenue, basically for infrastructure, which we'll get to in a couple of minutes here, which is millions of dollars in unfunded liability. I go for the majority. I'm going to go with the majority issue. I don't know what the exact split would be, but I think we're missing some information. Anything else on? Sure, go ahead. Go.
No, that brings up a good point. And if we're saying that the harbor gets paid the management fee out of the, and then everything else gets saved for the repairs of the parking lot, if that in language included for capital improvements to the harbor related items as well as included or in addition to the parking lot, you know, whichever comes first, then I'd be comfortable with that, knowing that that money was going to go help infrastructure on the Embarcadero. Because that parking lot's not always going to need repair, and if it's generating money, if it can be used across the street, that would be a way to win, possibly as well, for the improvements. Okay, but so besides that, he's pointing out the underground lines, so that's an improvement, but you know, I'm also looking at the capital improvements list that we have for the harbor. If that language could get included, possibly, that might make more sense instead of putting out a percentage.
So, Eric, quick question. Is the city still operating under the 100% cost recovery principle?
Yeah.
Yeah. So bear that in mind.
Okay. I mean, it could be you cover all the maintenance and infrastructure capital cost up front. Then what's left over, you decide how you're going to split it off.
Yeah.
That way it gets taken care of. And if it's Public Works doing something with their tractor, okay, that cost is covered. If it's us, you know, repairing the fence, that cost is covered. And general maintenance on something is covered. And then whatever's left over goes to some degree of split.
Okay. Bill?
You know, I kind of look at it as our leases.
Well, I think that's the missing element. I mean, how much is this going to cost to start? I mean, who's going to pay for that? Where is that money going to come from? And I think we need to have a little bit more information in order to make a rational decision on what split's going to be. I mean, who's going to pay for the fencing? Who's going to pay for, if we're going to have any lighting, who's going to pay for all this stuff first? Or are we just going to throw boats in there like we have right now and pay for it as we go? I mean, I don't have enough information to determine, is this going to cost us $50,000 to start? And where is that money going to come from?
My estimate for doing the initial fencing was about $15,000. Most okay. Everything else is.
So where's that money going to come from right now? From the Harbor Department?
Comes to the Harbor Fund, and then okay. I would propose that it gets paid back. That's one of the first thing that gets paid back. It's kind of like our launch ramp parking.
Okay.
You know, it costs us $22,000 to set that up. Got paid back in the first year out of the revenue.
Right.
So the revenues
okay.
initially go towards, and it's kind of the same thing on the statement I made earlier, revenues go towards maintenance and infrastructure, well, including the initial. Obviously, there's got to be a capital outlay up front, but then that gets paid off. And whatever's left over goes and gets split. So the
all
first
right.
year, a lot of it's going to go to
I
that.
Still feel the Harbor Department, then, with that answered, we should still have a substantial larger revenue share after 75-25, I think, is good.
Sure.
Perhaps the other option is us to just sublease the property from the general fund and we just run it on our own. Take 100%.
Not a bad idea.
At 8% of the appraised value of the property, like all our other leases?
Yeah.
You're brilliant. That's an interesting idea. Hadn't even thought of that angle. Okay. Well, we'll certainly analyze that. We did, boy, I wish I would have brought that now. We did, when we acquired that property, an assessment of its value was made. I'm trying to remember what it was per square foot. But we have a value. I mean, it's probably 3 or 4 years old now, but we had a valuation of it.
Wasn't the baseline value 500?
I don't remember.
Yeah, it's 500, and it's 2.2 acres, so if anybody's got a calculator. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's another way of looking at it.
Creative idea.
Okay.
So what is it that...
Then we can control it.
What is it the department, as we go through these five items, what is the department would like to have from us? Just input?
Yeah, input, and obviously we can get concurrence on things.
As opposed to a motioned recommendation?
I don't think we need that.
Okay.
Motion recommendation. I mean, on this item one, we've got the obvious majority going to Harbor Fund. 75-25 seems to be the rule of the day, but looking at this potential event, you just lease it at a certain percent.
I like that.
That might simplify the whole matter. Then we just pay the general fund that, and everything else goes to how we want it to go to maintenance and administration and everything else.
I think that the real catch on that, we can control the property at least.
Well, watch out, buddy.
No, I mean, seriously.
No, I'm serious.
Well,
you're talking to city council about controlling the city property. We've got to be a little
careful about that. Well, one of the things, looking through these documents, I don't see any. I mean, what happens if they decide to do something else with this property? What are we going to tell these boat owners? I mean, you got to leave in 30 days? I mean, this all needs to be looked at if we're going to do something like this. And so I think Gene's idea is actually a great idea. Then we can control the destiny of what we're trying to do. But that was my big concern here. So we go through and spend $15,000. And then all of a sudden, city council has another idea for this lot in 6 months from now, and everything we've done is for naught. And we have to have, I think, some guarantee that that's not going to happen. That's my personal opinion. Or, you know, I mean, we would really have some problems, I think, on our hands.
So maybe the sense I'm getting is, the 75-25, yeah, but let's take a serious look at the potential to make it a sublease at a reasonable rate and see what that looks like. And if that makes sense financially and logistically, to me it makes a lot of sense logistically.
Maybe on an annual basis.
Yeah.
With an annual option to renew.
Yeah, maybe. So we've sort of got two preferences here. The 75-25 majority going to Harbor, or how about the sublease if that pencils? Okay.
That would be a bold ask. Okay, number two.
Any more on that item? That's it? Okay, so number item two. And this kind of feeds into the same conversation. Some percentage of the revenues going back in a dedicated fund for area improvements, undergrounding the overhead power lines is something that's been on our list, or at least on our future agenda list, and moving the... trash can enclosures, although that would probably fall, if I had anything to say about it, to Gaffco and Harbor Hut, because it's their trash enclosures. And other things that may be for the area that need improvement.
And why, please, did you split this out? That's why I asked you what the definition of capital was in number one.
Why did I split it out?
Yeah.
Under the original concept of a revenue split of something called 75-25. Do we want to set aside before that split is made some percentage that are dedicated strictly to area improvements and capital stuff besides the original setup to get the thing up and running over time?
D- do you feel after the discussion on number one, do you feel you have enough input from us that, I mean, it sounds to me like majority or all of the board was thinking about concepts that would incorporate number two in number one. I mean, I'm happy to address number two if that's useful to you.
It doesn't have to be separate. I think a general sense that if everyone's in agreement, which I think we are, that some amount go back into area improvements, yeah.
Yeah, clearly has to. I mean, it's property.
Not just to set it up and
property
manage it.
It's property management. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
We got development costs, and we have maintenance and property management costs. It's just like any other piece of real estate.
That can vary from year to year. It could be 10% 1 year. It could be 50 1 year. It could be nothing 1 year.
You bet.
Depending on what you've had identified and what you want to do.
You bet.
Very on need. Okay. Item three. Council want to know a little bit more about security. My analysis or my input on it would be, standard cyclone or chain link fencing, top with some kind of barbed wire, keep the casual climber out. Obviously, if someone really wants in, you're not going to keep them out. They're going to just cut through the fence or find a way over it. So you're never going to fully keep people out, but some sort of barbed wire to keep folks out and not be too intrusive, and then lighting just consisting of ambient one, because there's no, other than that 240 kV line ahead, overhead, there's no power there, so it'd be a fair chunk of infrastructure cost to get some kind of power there, although maybe you could potentially do solar, but also just relying on ambient. There's actually a fair amount of light coming from the power plant next door, and I don't want to light up the neighborhood either and get them up in arms about a bunch of light coming off this place. So that would be my input on it.
Okay, so number three, any comments? Number three?
No. I'm good.
Good. Neil?
Good.
Okay, Lynn?
Okay.
Jeremiah?
Yes.
Gene? Okay, four.
Suggested location. So one of the council's comments on the infrastructure part was to relocate the GAFCO and Harbor Hut trash enclosures. Any druthers on where that should go? I'm foreseeing this lot going either against the eastern fence boundary, currently where the boats kind of are now, or against the fence that butts up against Dynegy. The downside with that is that's on the other side of those power lines, and we're hoping to get, which we already have a couple of boats that want to do mast up. So it would make more sense to be on the eastern side, and then you can have half and half until such time that 240 kV line gets undergrounded. But I would think up against the eastern fencing would be the best location. And as far as the dumpster enclosures go, maybe they just flip-flop over into that corner of the lot, southeast corner of the triangle lot, kind of at the south end of where we would have our boating trailer storage facility. But
how are they going to get their carts in there?
Good question.
I understood it. You're talking about inside the fence.
Without paving something.
The area that you're talking about, where they are right now, where they exist, and then you have a dirt area that's going to be a cultural area, park
yep.
setting for the Selenian tribe. And then on the other side of that, you could put them there, and then the fence starts. And then you have plenty of room for
masked
up areas.
It's not paved, Dana. That's my point.
Oh, does it have to be paved?
They wheel carts all the way across the street.
I see them all full
of stuff.
And, I mean, if we had to pave that area, but, I mean, you can go over the gravel with those carts. They have big wheels.
Okay.
I don't know. They're not going to be thrilled about it to begin with, but...
To be blunt, sorry, that's the price you pay for not having it on your own property, where it really ought to be. But... It's moved off for a number of reasons, but...
Yeah, I've always wondered, why aren't there enclosures up against the building?
They used to keep them in enclosures where the boardwalk now goes. They were, Gaffco's had them just on the north side of their building, kind of up. So if you picture where there, before there was the boardwalk there, you just had a parking lot with a little swale curb, and they were just right there against that swale curb in a little wooden cinder block enclosure.
And I think that particular type of debris or ashes and so forth, getting it away from the buildings, personally, I think, is especially up against a bank, not flammable. We've had a big fire on the waterfront in the past, and we certainly don't want to do that again.
No, that's a good point. And every year, it seems, although they're usually pretty good at, you know, because by the time they get those ashes over there the next morning, they're usually out. But not always. There's been a number of fires in those dumpsters, and, yeah, having them not against a building is probably a good thing. I mean, you could potentially build, you know, go in through the driveway, that paver driveway that we put in, and then do a DG path, you know, instead of that loose pea gravel. You could get a path that those carts would be able to go over just fine. Maybe they've got to get ones with bigger, rounder wheels, but I wouldn't see it being a problem.
So there's this is a question, not a statement. So there's no opportunity to move that dumpster enclosure south? I mean, I know the layout. I got it in my head, but
coming from the other direction, coming north that way.
Well, I meant immediately south, not down by the motels. Like, how about going around the corner
by the bathroom?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you have a stair set of stairs that empties out right
there. Along there for the stairs.
No hotel.
How about between the stairs and the new development? There's 100 feet of bank there with nothing.
Well, we'll throw all these. I think what we can do is just sort of throw all these against the wall and see what sticks. They're just ideas, which is what I'm looking for. I don't need a do-all,
well,
be-all.
Yeah, it said suggested, so that's what.
You know what? Why we're talking. What you guys have down the way in front of the city slips there, where you've taken pier timbers. Put them vertically to surround the trash cans in there. Yeah. If you did something like that, even in the parking lot, so they wouldn't have to go across the street, and as long as they have metal containers, which they're dumping that stuff in, I mean, they have
As we'll hear in the budget item, I'm proposing to get rid of some of those dumpsters.
So Dana,
but maybe they'll be empty now for these.
Eric, I was just going to ask if there isn't a facility. Do you still have the one across from
East
where Jack Hansen's boat used to be? There used to be one there. Were you going to keep that dumpster in that facility?
Take up one of their parking spots.
That would be one of the ones I was proposing.
Well,
that's
off the agenda item.
Agenda item for tonight.
Well, let's stay on this, okay?
Well, that's for this. So I'm just saying it's you.
Well, this is about Gaffco and a Harbor Hut trash.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Well, I guess let's term it so we can talk about it over in the parking lot across the street.
Yes.
Then we can talk about it on the next item about those trash cans.
I like
cans. Is there an opportunity to cross the street?
On the west side of the Embarcadero.
No, west side.
East side.
No.
West side.
West side. North. Put it on the west side.
West side of Embarcadero Road.
Our side? Oh, really?
Okay. So possible some opportunities there.
We could argue there's a safety factor here, and somebody says, well, wait a minute, what happens to that parking space? I go, well, okay, you want it, how about if you put it in a nice enclosure about the curb out there on the west side right along the edge of Embarcadero, and then your good folks don't have to wheel their stuff across two lanes of traffic.
Yeah.
I've always wondered why they were over there anyway, but what do I know? Okay, anything else on four?
No.
Anything else on
I'm
four?
I'm good on four.
Okay, five.
Okay, this is sort of the meat and potatoes of the thing. We drew up draft policies and procedures and a draft storage agreement.
Yeah, and we have those, and unless you want to do it differently, what I would suggest is that we just ask the board if they have comments. Let's start with the boat storage facility policies and procedures, and if they have comments, have them cite the paragraph number or line item number. Does that suit your fancy?
Yeah, that's either, however you want to go through it.
Okay. So, Bill, let's start with you. It's the boat storage facility policies and procedures document. It's 3 pages.
The only thing that I did read it, but maybe I didn't read it well enough. Is there a just a month-to-month policy? I mean, there's no term. Okay, so this is just month-to-month?
Yeah, month-to-month.
Okay. So, all right.
Okay. Not long-term.
Okay, Dana?
Yeah, under the facility policies and procedures, E, gate access will be by combination lock as deemed necessary. I think that we have discussed this before, but a key card system might be much better, although I wouldn't want to delay the project by adding that cost into it immediately, but I think that would be something that could go in later if not right, you know, if it's not affordable in the beginning, because it's very manageable. You can tell, I mean, it's like a hotel key. If someone loses one, then you can charge them to give them a new one and
or
delete the
or unprogram
access
it.
To the other one.
Yeah. Be a cost issue to look into. And then might be on the improvement list for future stuff.
And then another one I have is J. Talks about maintenance of boats and or trailers in the storage lot prohibited unless necessary to make trailer roadworthy due to unforeseen circumstances. But then if you see, where is it? Twelve. On the next page, it talks about outside contractors.
I don't have a 12.
Yeah, I know. It's on the next document.
Okay,
so we won't go into that. But it's on the next document, and it talks about, anyways, I guess we'll get to that when we get
to that
document.
Your question is, why would an outside contractor be in there to work on a boat?
Yeah.
Good point. We'll get to that when we get there.
Okay.
The intent is it's not a repair yard.
Correct.
If your trailer's got a flat or a spring blew out or something bad has happened that you can't move your boat, well, yeah, you're not going to drag it out of there with flat tires. And
storage only.
Storage only.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep.
To that point, you could put approved contract workers, so the city would have approval.
Yeah.
For AAA.
Yeah, if you had to hire somebody
you're on the next
or retire to come do your boat, yeah.
We're working on this document, boat storage facility policies and procedures. Okay. Lynn?
My only comments are under information, and there are just some parts in here that I don't find really easily understandable. Under A, failure to maintain the boats and trailers stored in the storage lot in a satisfactory state of repair and or appearance, such as ripped or torn covers, flat tires, areas around the storage lot space not policed. Now, I would guess that you mean if it's messy. But
yes, that's the intent. And I'm going to admit we stole most of this from other policies and procedures. This suited somebody somewhere.
That's okay. So we have an ample opportunity to improve it.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that's housekeeping. Maybe we mentioned housekeeping or something like that.
Or under D, continued failure to pay fees in a timely manner. Okay. But continued failure, does that mean after one incident that you're late payment or after four incidents of a late payment? As one who pays their bills late, I could say, what is continued? I'm paying.
You're never late until you show up.
Probably should just change that to failure to pay fees. Lori, do we mention when payments due?
Yeah,
here?
There is some place where it says it's due
in the agreement.
Due on the first.
Yeah, on H.
And then late after 30 days.
Payments due in the first 6 months, yeah. So I think that needs to be changed. And that's why we're doing this. we're only so many eyes can look at this.
Okay, Lynn.
Failure.
Okay. I have one more.
Sure.
Okay.
Failure to pay fees as specified.
As agreed. As per the agreement.
Right. We don't need to talk about
anything. Because the agreement is very much more specific.
Yep. Okay.
Okay. And lastly, under action, number 6, if issuance of enclosure 3 is necessary. I don't know what that means either.
It's a document that's not attached to this packet.
Okay, so it still doesn't make sense.
No, I understand. No, okay. No, you're totally right.
Laura? Yeah.
No, I think it's number 3 above it.
No, I don't think so.
I don't know. Well, that's what I was sort of looking at, but
I don't think so.
Don't know.
So there's a point for number 6,
yeah,
and it just needs to be clarified so that for the purposes of the Morro Bay Harbor Department.
Yep. Yeah, either clarify it or get rid of it. Okay?
That's it.
Okay. Jeremiah?
No, I'm off.
Dane? Gene?
Yeah, I think this is where I want to bring this in under boat storage. And there's an ongoing need for an area on the Barcadero for staging. If there's going to be ongoing construction up and down the Barcadero, we need an area to be able to lay down material, do that kind of staging of construction. And seeing how the triangle lot is the only lot basically available, I would propose that you don't take up the whole area for boat storage. That area on the southeast corner would be an ideal area for staging of construction. An example would be for if Harbor Hut wanted to do remodel, they need some area to stage their laydown areas, their material to storage, things like that.
And given your profession, how many square feet would you suggest?
Oh, 50 by 100, something like that.
So
minimum.
We're not proposing, nor have we ever proposed, to take up the whole triangle lot?
No, just part of it.
Part of it?
Yeah.
Leaving, obviously, some of it available for public parking.
Yeah.
Just general public parking. And, yeah, I mean, Corps of Engineers, there's a number of people have used that lot for staging. A lot of city projects, too, when we did paving and other stuff. So.
Yeah, but I think Gene's point might be that the plan, the lot plan, has a designated area in mind for that potential use.
I would just say that Eric brought up the fact that the overhead line, where that is, that kind of also distinguishes a certain part of it more susceptible to area for boat storage, for some of the boat storage. So I know the lot. I see it every, quite often. And there is a lot of room around there for staging that could be possible. You know, whether you had a container and some staging area so that you had a place to put all your stuff in, a build area, whatever.
So given your comment about the overhead line standard, do you think
if you're going to do the staging that you would
more
not
like the
take up
west
that
corner?
Area that's
more like
right
the,
to the southeast corner.
More like the northwest corner?
Yeah. Or
something like that?
Yeah, or right where underneath the power line.
Hmm. I guess the takeaway is don't lay it out such that you've killed construction and other staging areas. Keep that in mind.
Okay. Gene, anything else? Okay. Item A, I might suggest that you insert after the word currently the capital letter word state, and after the word registered or capital F federally documented.
Okay.
And down on F, at the end of the second sentence, which currently is tires are to be kept properly inflated, you might consider something like and vessel interiors are to be kept free of accumulated water.
Interior includes
You bet. We don't, you know, item I. The last sentence reads, if payment is by check, assigned storage lot space number must be noted along. I think you're missing a word with.
We are.
Item J, repair and or maintenance of boats and trailers in the storage lot, the R should be an is. And item K, access to storage lot will be limited to registered. I might suggest the inclusion of the word vessel owners or vessel or trailer owners. Item M, do you want to say will not or cannot? Seems like it should be cannot to make an affirmative out of it.
Sure.
And
be easier to say portable type gas. Storage of portable gas type containers is prohibited.
Cannot be stored.
Yeah.
As opposed to will not. Down in information, you talk about insurance in item two. And then you talk about completion, goes on to completion of the release. I might suggest the inclusion of additional item, and that is that they provide accurate information concerning the overall length of the boat and or the trailer, the overall width, and the overall height. Well, description, that can be kind of confusing. Somebody might say, well, mine's white. Because what it's a space calculation and a fee calculation thing. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Okay. Sure. That's a good idea. You bet. And down under information, item C, what please or would the details be of the required insurance? Because I read all the other documents carefully, and I don't see a description. I don't need an answer right now, but, I mean, I need to tell them what kind of insurance.
Right.
And your last item, 8, on that document, I think 30 days is too short. Having been in that situation myself, at least 60, and I actually would go for 90. Brings us back to the discussion item we had about what might happen to that lot in the future. And we got some folks that are storing their stuff there in good faith.
Okay.
There were heads nodding up and down.
Yes.
On that one.
Yeah.
So. Okay, so that brings us to City of Morro Bay Harbor Department dry storage agreement terms and conditions. We'll go the other way. Gene, anything on this document?
No.
Jeremiah?
No.
Lynn?
No.
Neil?
No.
Dana?
Just the outside contractors, number 12.
What's your thought?
Well, why would they need them if it's just storage?
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe we can just add something. To me, it's somebody gets a flat and they don't want to jack up their trailer, take the tire and go bring it to a tire shop. They're going to have Morro Bay Tire come and fix it.
Okay, that works.
Well, so there's other descriptors for those kinds of activities than contractor, you know, service providers. Lest there be some confusion as to what we're talking about.
I'll add something about service can only be limited to the roadworthiness part.
Yeah, okay. That's, yeah, it's a good point, Dana. Bill?
No.
Okay. 13, indemnification. Owner is heirs, successors, guests. And anybody they know any time ever in their entire life, hereby release, harmless, and indemnify the Harbor Department. Do you need to also include the City of Morro Bay in that indemnification? Because I might not sue you, but I might sue the city.
Yeah, it needs to be more generic. Let's cover the city.
Okay, yep. And this document also... this might be a good place for the insurance requirements to be spelled out as opposed to the policies and procedures. Okay, that brings us to dry storage rules and regulations. Bill? Dina?
I'm good.
Okay, Neil?
I'm good.
Lynn?
My only, it may not be necessary. Number six, a vessel under trailer shall be moved to an alternate storage space if deemed appropriate by the harbor staff. Do you need a time limit in there? Shall be moved within 5 days of being notified by the harbor department. Shall be moved if the owner has to move it or if the harbor department is going to move it. I would assume the owner would move it. If you deem it necessary to be moved, that you'd have to give them some time limit.
Good point. Some number of hours, 48, 72 hours, something along those lines.
That's kind of short if the guy's working all week and can't get down to move his boat.
Okay.
Anything else, Lynn?
Yeah.
Jeremiah?
No.
Gene?
No.
Item seven. Access to the storage facility is prohibited to all persons other than harbor staff, the tenant on record. And you, in the prior document, you talked about, or maybe it's the next, yeah, in the prior document, you talked about a tenant can fill out an access authorization form for other parties,
right,
and register it with the department.
Mm-hmm.
So you might want to include persons on the tenant's authorized list or something like that. Item 17, all stored equipment must be enter on the vessel and or trailer should it be secured as opposed to just sitting there.
Can you repeat that, Ron?
Sure. Item 17, yes. All stored equipment must be in or on the vessel and or trailer, period. Should it also be secured and secured?
Okay.
Thinking about stuff blowing around. 19, you just got to fix the word port, that's all.
Might have copied this from somebody else.
Yeah, that's okay. It's all right.
All right. 17, it says storage of portable fuel containers is prohibited. Could that language also be used where you had it under M, portable type gas containers will not be stored?
That's what I was thinking. And then the other one, instead of dancing around it, can or will, just they're prohibited. Let's just say they're prohibited.
And I have one other thought. When you're talking about, you were talking about the length and the breadth of the vessel, but is not the trailer also included?
That's
because the tongue of the...
That's what I said.
Oh, I'm all right.
That's
sorry.
What I said. Vessel and or trailer.
Vessel
and or trailer.
Okay.
Or the
okay.
longest, or should be largest object.
The largest of them,
largest
the longest measurement of in any direction or in each
yeah.
direction. Sorry.
No, that's sorry. No. That's good.
That's good.
Okay. All right. Anything else? Okay. Anything else from us on this agenda item?
No, thank you. All great input. Thanks
okay.
for the extra eyes.
Okay, C2. C2 is an update from the Finance and Budget Ad Hoc Committee. Also, in addition to that, we have some other items, which is presentation and input on the water, electricity, trash disposal, and cost allocation elements of the draft fiscal year 2018-2019 Harbor Department operating budget and presentation and input on Harbor Department budget overview and goal document. This is a pretty pithy item. So keying off on what Dana did with the Marine Service facility, why don't we get a committee report first?
Okay. I'll keep this short, and then we'll circle back. So we have met twice since the last HAB meeting. We were able to meet with Jennifer Calloway, the city's finance director, as well as Harbor Director Eric Endersby. All of the ad hoc committees were present, and we had a second follow-up meeting just solely with the ad hoc committee. In the first meeting with Jennifer, we discussed the cost allocation study, and we focused on two items, and we were going to try and attack that first, one of those being the lighting study that the harbor director had staff perform, and the second item was looking at legal fees and trying to figure out how those costs were actually being realized in the cost allocation. Because this presentation is so robust, and I know that some of these topics come up a little later, real fast before I finish my part on this, Eric, are you planning on going over everything that's included here, or is this some, like the budget overview, for example, in the, I don't want to steal any of your thunder out of your report, so I don't.
Well, you can steal all the thunder you want, but I was intending to cover everything but the committee report, so if you just want to handle what we did with Jennifer, and if you need anything else on that, I can add to it, but that was my intent, was to go over all the rest of the...
Including the findings from the lighting and the effects that's going to have, what the action...
Well, you can, if you want to convey what sort of our general agreement, what came out of that meeting with Jennifer,
okay,
that'd be fine, then I can go into the details of what we actually found.
Okay, great. So, I don't know how to pull those two apart. I apologize. So the lighting study found that we are actually using about $14,000, whereas we're being billed for $35,000. And so they're removing the $35,000, and now I feel like I'm getting into Eric's territory that he needs to describe. Apologize. So I'm going to back out of the direction I was going. The most important thing that we found through our meetings was that no matter what we do with this cost allocation, even if they took it all away, we're still going to have a huge shortfall in what we owe at the end of the year with all of the capital lists, the capital requirements, whether it be maintenance or replacement or new creation, for example, the harbor office. And so that comes to the tune of around $4 million. We have a document that I have here with the that I've given all the members. I'm going to put it up on the screen over here for the public. That's okay. This is a deep...
Hang on a second.
Sorry.
Hang on a second. Hey, buddy. Wrong document.
Wrong document. The one that I had on there was... There you go. Yeah, yeah. Okay, thanks.
Thanks.
This is a detailed description of what in the budget overview is referenced as $4 million. It's a total of $4.17 million. And this is composed of harbor maintenance, building... a harbor office construction, North T Pier slips, Dune Street slips, Tideland Park, side tide dock, launch ramp slips north, and launch ramp slips south. And this is looking, is this a 10-year study? This is the 10-year study? That it's going to, over 10 years, it'll cost us $4 million?
Yeah, that's kind of a very condensed, abbreviated version of our capital.
Right.
Major capital project stuff. That's just replacement of the big items.
Right. And so this document was compiled by city staff, and so we're using this as our, I don't know, for lack of a better word, our benchmark, our starting point for working on what
you,
we...
You might want to point out that this is replacement, not and there's also maintenance.
There's replacement. Oh, yeah. Sorry. This doesn't include maintenance. So this isn't complete. This
yeah,
is a snapshot. These are just the biggest items. This
major
isn't all
capital
of it.
Replacement.
So this number, 4.1 $7 million just grows from here. So that's one item that stands out to us, that no matter really what happens with the cost allocation, even if it goes down, which chances are that it won't, it'll probably go up. I mean, I don't know anything else that's gone down. So as it gets, that number is just going to continue to grow more. So we're going to need to come up with some solution to take care of these things, or, you know, the city of Morro Bay is going to be telling people to come visit Morro Bay, but don't stand on the docks. And that's how I'm going to start this meeting. And if I can turn it over to Eric now, unless members of my, to Eric, you think?
Yeah.
Bill, did you want to input anything before I turn it to Eric?
No, I think that's good.
Okay. Eric, I'll let you take over from here.
Sure. So I'll address the cost allocation items first, since that was your main gist of in our main meeting with Jennifer Calloway, the finance director. And as we know, the cost allocation, quote-unquote, gut check was one of our goal items, which I think we've accomplished. So the two sort of outstanding items, short of a full redo of the cost allocation, which I'll get to maybe towards the end, and the direction the city may be going on that, the two big action items were the lighting, being charged $30,000 for the harbor's share of the city street lighting that's supplied by PG&E. When I first discovered this item in our budget, $30,000 item out of a bill from PG&E that was about $100,000, so we were paying for a third of the city's lighting when it's a little questionable whether we have a third of the actual lighting.
Eric, I apologize for interrupting you, but there are some folks I suspect who might be watching this that don't understand the cost allocation. If you could give us a two sentence description of that.
So the cost allocation, the harbor department runs as an enterprise fund, meaning all the revenues generated and expenses generated within a designated geographical zone stay in that zone, with the exception of about $275,000 that the enterprise fund pays up to, in other words, the harbor department pays up to the general fund for services rendered from public works and city council and city manager and payroll and all the other stuff we get from the general fund. We have to pay for that. So that's the cost allocation, and that number is derived from a study that's done by a consultant that goes through and studies what we're getting from the general fund and other funds and what that cost is, and it turns it into a number that we budget for.
Which was last done in?
2009-2010.
And the city's been reorged at least twice since then.
Sure.
Thank you. Thanks.
One item, again, that cost allocation was that lighting. So the new finance director agreed that was not a good allocation. She didn't understand where it came from or how it came to be within the cost allocation from her looking at it, from the information she had. So what I did is I had one of my harbor patrol officers, Scott Mather, went around and identified every single light on the Embarcadero, on which side of the road it's on, identified what kind of a light it is, and actually identified some that I think the ones that we thought we were being billed for, some that had been taken away, but I think we're looking at some older billing. We straightened out some things with PG&E, and it turned up into being a pretty good learning exercise in one sense in terms of what's out there and what we're being billed for. So I went through the list, and basically what we have is of the current, there's 706 street lights within the city of Morro Bay. They vary in cost from $170 to $200 per light per year, depending on what size and type it is, billing from PG&E. Again, we've been paying about $30,000 of a $100,000 bill for those lights over the years. Our analysis showed that we actually had 78 of those lights on the west side of the Embarcadero and going down Coleman and on the other side of the creek at Morro Dunes, which is still within the Tidelands Trust Zone, and then going out to the Rock, all within the Tidelands Enterprise Trust Zone. So we had 78 lights. And if you take the average of those street lights, $170 to $200, because we can't parse them out light by light, necessarily, because, I mean, we could, but it'd take a heck of a lot of work. We just took an average of the two, and it's $185 per light. So if you take 178 lights times 185 per light, that's $14,430. little bit different than $30,000. So we've been paying approximately double what we probably should for the last 8 years since cost allocation was put in place. Jennifer Calloway agreed that the cost allocation method as it existed was probably not correct. This analysis really backed it up. And so as we know, we've reported previously, when I brought this to the previous finance director's attention about 3 years ago, she agreed to cease the annual CPI adjustment on the cost allocation until we caught back up with making the lighting sort of whole, in other words, not being overcharged for the lighting. So what I did is I went back to 2011, which was the last time that our cost allocation was up, the 2010-2011 fiscal year, last time the cost allocation had a CPI adjustment, took that number, took $30,000 out of it, in other words, the lighting element out of it, and then CPI adjusted that number forward to today so that I could ground truth taking the lighting out of it.
That was from 2012?
From 2012 through this fiscal year. Found out what the CPI changes were each fiscal year and applied that percentage year after year. Our initial number that I started with was almost $252,000 was my starting point with the cost allocation was back then. CPIing it up to today brought me to this current fiscal year in $278,000 and change. Our current cost allocation this year is $288,000. But so in essence, we've quote unquote overpaid by $4,600 in this year. But that's not counting the lighting. So you add the lighting back on top, $14,430, we're actually $9,700 underpaid this year if you take all this analysis into effect. So we'll figure out how we're going to deal with that this year going into next year. I haven't worked that out with Jennifer, but going into next year, we apply the cost allocation CPI, and we end up at $306,230. Which includes the lighting and the additional restroom cleaning. So that's what our cost allocation is pegged for next year in the 2018-19 budget. So we've corrected the lighting error. It doesn't, unfortunately, correct the amount that got us to $251,000 in 2012 with the additional lighting from 2009-10 up to there, but at least it chews it up for today. And at the end of my presentation, I'll be talking about where the city may be going with a new cost allocation study that'll throw all this out the window altogether, and hopefully we'll just get back to paying PG&E directly for those actual lights, which will be the simplest way to do it rather than trying to cost allocate it out. So that's where we went with the lighting. Any questions on that? I know it's a lot of moving parts.
Go ahead.
I was just wondering, and you might have said it, so and I misunderstood or didn't hear it properly, but will the harbor get reimbursed for
$128,000?
Yes. That's two. Okay.
Yeah, plus interest.
Okay.
Yeah, so will that be reimbursed by the city back to the Tidelands?
We have not discussed that.
Okay. Because it seems to me that flies in the face of the Tidelands lease agreement as far as the funds that the city is allowed to recover. It seemed to me it would be a direct violation of that.
Well, since we trued this up, so the cost allocation was put in place in was conducted in 2009. I guess the 2009-10 fiscal year.
Yeah.
Was probably when it was enacted, this newest one.
Yes.
So there's a 9-10 and a 10-11 year.
It went into action.
Correct.
That fiscal year.
So if 2009, 2010 was incorrectly allocated, 2010, 2011 was incorrectly allocated. And 11, 12 incorrectly calculated. I've trued it up from 12, 13 on. So at my math tells me we've overpaid by about $15,000 per year for 3 years. That's $45,000.
Okay.
That has not been a point of discussion yet. To answer your question.
Do you think that that's an appropriate discussion for the Harvard Department to have with City Hall?
Oh, sure. Would the Harvard Advisory Board recommend that?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
And not only that,
I'll come with you for buddy backup.
I was just going to say, we'd be happy to be there with you.
Okay. Thank you for that. So that's the lighting. Any other questions on that? City attorney was the other item. So the cost allocation was put in place when we had an in-house city attorney. That obviously changed. When the previous city attorney was still here, since the sewer fund was undergoing some significant issues with the water treatment plant and funding of that and other things in play with the city attorney and his time, the cost allocation amount for the city attorney that was in the cost allocation plan was put aside, and the city attorney's time was doled out to all the funds in the manner of 40% to the general fund, 20% to the water enterprise fund, 20% to the sewer enterprise fund, and 20% to the harbor enterprise fund. And that's how it was allocated out until we went to the contract city attorney, which we have now, Alisher and Winder. And the costing out of that now, the way it is occurring, is there's a base amount that Alisher and Winder costs us per year, basically a retention fee. Don't ask me what that number is because I don't know it. But there's a base amount that is still costed out on that 40-20-20-20 basis. And then additional time of the city attorney is based on a time and materials basis because he tracks all of his time. What we are hoping to go to is a pure time and materials model because he tracks all his time that way. There is some time when he's here twice a month for a day and a half, 2 days, during council meeting dates, and some other times when there's additional things happening that need his or his assistant's presence, that he's not billing out on a time and materials basis to any particular department, because there may be times he's sitting in the office and he's not necessarily talking to or dealing with any particular department. So we may not cost allocate out on that basis, but do it on the 40-20-20 basis. But the majority is where we're trying to go with it is, at least for the enterprise funds, is on a cost time and materials basis. And the new cost allocation plan, should we do one, should the city do one, will hopefully take into account the proper allocating of city attorney's time rather than this sort of amalgamation or morphing of a plan that we've done over the last 8 or 9 years. Any questions on that?
Nope.
Okay, so that's the quick overview on the cost allocation. So I think in terms of our gut check, we're done with it. We can check that box off. I've got faith in our city administration and our finance director that she's wanting to do, what's fair and right and equitable and make it happen into the next year's budget. So that's where we're going on that.
Eric, maybe at this time, do you want to finish up talking about the cost allocation?
Yeah, it's probably a good segue. So before I go into our budget, so in the next council meeting next week, although it may be the meeting after, I'm not quite sure which, the staff is proposing approval of a request for proposals to go out for a new cost allocation study for all the enterprise funds, and also a fee study for all the city's fees, because one hasn't been done in a long time, and you really need to know what it costs to provide recreation services and water and all the things that have a fee associated to them. It really needs to be determined by a professionally derived study to know what most of those things cost you. So we're proposing to go out to get a full, robust fee study. And looking at impact fees in the city's impact fees. Currently, there's several impact fees that the city assesses. I don't know them all. I don't have them memorized, but I'll just use an example. You build a single-family residence, and you know it's going to have an impact on the city services, and there's a fee that goes along with that. And I think it's based on the amount, either the square footage of the house or the cost of it, the cost estimate. I'm not quite sure what, but there's an impact fee because you're having an impact on city services because you're bringing more people in. So there's a fee that goes along with that. There should have been a harbor impact fee implemented decades ago, but unfortunately there never was. So for all the development that's occurred along the waterfront, it incrementally has an effect on our department, especially if you talk about slips and whatnot. Adding slips and adding boating infrastructure, that has an impact on the Harbor Patrol, obviously, but it also has an impact on our administration of our department and on the land side as well. But unfortunately, we've never had a harbor impact fee. We should, so we're going to be looking at what it takes to establish one of those and what that impact fee might be for various development along our waterfront. So that's all going into one big RFP package. It'll be parsed out with additives to where we can sort of pick and choose depending on what the cost of that is for those individual elements. But hopefully that'll be going to City Council here shortly, and we'll see where we're going with that. So we may be getting a new cost allocation as sort of the bottom line out of this.
Yeah, and furthermore with that, so if it goes out next week, the timeline would be to have the RFP go out by the end of the week, have responses by May 10th or 11th, and then whoever is awarded it would hopefully then have all summer to have it completed before or by December so that it would go into the next budget. So this is happening right now, so it's something that I think that's important for us to discuss and either recommend or support.
So on that timeline, that might put it, I'm going to look on my handy dandy smartphone here on the city's we should have the agenda posted by now, being Thursday evening. I was just going to look and see if I can find the agenda. Well, Laura, can you look that up?
And while you're doing that, Gene?
It may be on next week's agenda.
Eric, the proposed impact fees, that would be for new construction?
Or redevelopment.
Okay. But you can't retrofit back to somebody else and say, okay, you're going through a lease agreement, now we're going to include that in that particular time?
Well, it those fees are assessed during the permitting process,
yes,
as you well know. Yes. A lease site redevelopment or, you know, adding of slips where slips never were, things like that are pretty obvious. A major remodel type thing, I don't know at what point those fees get triggered in that kind of a scenario. Like, you know, I'll use Doug Redican's project that he just got approved for the additional hotel rooms. To me, that would be one that would get assessed a harbor impact fee because it's a change in an increasing of intensity of uses, or at least a change in intensity of uses that could trigger an additional impact. But that's what all gets analyzed in that fee study stuff.
So, Neil, back to your point, I'm happy to reaffirm this body's insistence on updating the cost allocation study as it relates to the Harbor Department, but we have been singing this song for about a year now, but if you want us to reaffirm as a body, I'm happy to have us reaffirm as a body.
I think we need to reaffirm as a body, just to have it on record.
Okay, so that I'll take a motion.
I would move that we support the cost allocation study as well as the surrounding studies.
You mean an updated?
I would move that we support an updated cost allocation study. And what are the other two names? There's two other the impact study?
The harbor impact fee.
And the user fee study.
And the, yes. Okay. All of the city fees.
Okay, now restate it, please.
Not sure that got even clarified.
Okay, well, just a second. Lori's got to be ready for this.
So yeah.
She's distracted.
What are the three studies? We got the cost allocation.
Impact fees. And basically master fee schedule items.
Master fee schedule.
So here's, if you really want to deal officially here, Lori pulled it up. It's on the agenda. Release a request for proposals to seek qualified firms to perform a comprehensive fee study and cost allocation plan. There you go. Comprehensive fee study and cost allocation plan.
Comprehensive fee schedule.
Fee study.
I'm sorry, guys.
Cost allocation plan.
Cost allocation plan. Okay. Would you like to restate your motion?
Yeah, I would. Okay. I move that the Harbor Advisory Board support the updated comprehensive fee study and cost allocation plan.
I second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Discussion. How would you propose that the Harbor Advisory Board quote support unquote that? We have a variety of options. The one that I think would be the most useful, perhaps, is that we take the opportunity to address that directly to the City Council and not just talk about support, but I'm fine with the way it is. I'm just saying we need some teeth.
Well, I mean, if you want to articulate a way that you think we could put some teeth into it, I agree with you. We have been talking about it for a year, and I'm just trying to renew essentially what we've been talking about.
What I would suggest instead of support is that you consider maybe rephrasing your motion, withdrawing it, rephrasing it, that we recommend that the City Council take positive action on the, and then that brings us to the description of the upcoming agenda item.
I got you. Instead of support, mm-hmm. but that they take positive action
relative to the update of the comprehensive fee study and cost allocation plan.
You guys want to discuss that?
Well, you have to withdraw your first motion.
Sorry.
And the second has to agree.
I would like to withdraw my first motion.
Okay. Is the second okay with that?
The second agrees.
Okay.
With that.
So do I hear a new motion?
Yeah, hold on.
Mm-hmm. Take your time.
I would like to move that we recommend that the city take positive action relative to the updating the comprehensive fee study and cost allocation plan.
Is there a second?
And I second that.
Okay. Discussion? Gene?
Does that include the impact fees?
Yeah, that's all three of them.
Okay.
That's the comprehensive fee study.
It covers all that stuff.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Abstentions? Okay. One abstention. Okay. Carries. Okay. Eric, back to you.
Thank you. So continuing on with the rest of the item. So this is going into the budget. Got some preliminary budget numbers here, although things have already changed several times. We've all been requested to develop our operating budgets, which I have. A certain amount of input was received from the finance department in terms of our fixed costs with personnel and other things that comes from the finance department. We estimate our revenues, both our leases and all our boating things, due to several factors. With our leases this year, you know, we're looking at probably flat revenues. We've largely recovered from the economic downturn of 2008. We've come back out of that hole, fortunately, and are back to about the same revenues before the crash. Several of our leaseholders anecdotally have reported this year being one of the best ever, which is kind of runs contrary to all the doom and gloom we heard about the Highway 1 closure and everything else happening. I think combination of floods and fires down in Southern California, and I personally think that Highway 1 being closed is helped in a sense that all the people that were just looking at Morro Bay as they drove past going to Carmel or up to Big Sur are now stopping here and maybe staying here and going for little shots up into Big Sur because they can't go all the way through. So getting a lot of reports of robust revenues, but still we're projecting very conservatively a flat year, or maybe even a down year, as has been projected by management partners. And our other big factor is we've got several leases in significant flux. We've got, I think, 9 lease sites being reappraised this year and 4 or 5 that are Pipkin leases or other leases up for renewal, and just we're not exactly sure where those are going to end up going. It's been very difficult for Laurie and I to estimate what our revenues are going to be. We've had to use a combination of historical and best estimates to come up with a number and plug them in. Our T-Pier revenues are down significantly, especially in the North T-Pier. I think that's largely because of the fisheries, probably salmon largely, that last few years. And we got a little boon from crab and a little bit of squid over the last few years, but that's now gone away. I haven't seen much crab activity around here, and squid as well. We don't seem to be having quite as much as we did for a few years. And salmon, you know, we've had the closures and disasters, and it just, you know, we used to get seasonally a pretty good little bump of salmon boats and even sometimes albacore boats, and you haven't had an albacore year in forever. So those revenues are way down on the piers, and obviously cost of everything has gone up. So I'm taking a pretty conservative approach on revenue projections. Expenses, again, they're always increasing. The city's pension costs, water and electricity costs are going up, water especially because of the new treatment facility in the rate study we've recently done and the rate increases that have occurred, and there's probably going to be more rate increases. Unfortunately, on our South T Pier, we had not been getting billed on a meter that was never put in there since 1986. I probably shouldn't say that too loud if anybody in PG&E is listening, but we put in a meter, and that's costing us about $700 more a month. So all costs are obviously up, and so we're looking at cost up, revenues flat, and being tasked with making some cuts to make the budget balance. As of writing the staff report, and its picture's gotten a little better, my revenues were about $2,032,000 and expenses $2,042,000. Like I said, that's gotten straightened out a little bit more, but we're still not quite there, although all the numbers aren't in. Grants, we're proposing to have $33,000 in grants, mostly boating waterways for the derelict boat demolition and from the cable committee for getting us over to D.C. every year. To get where we are, at least as of the writing of this report, I had to cut about 15% out of supplies and about 1.6% out of services. And again, the cost allocation, we've trued that up, and it's changed from, what was it, $278,000 in this budget year to $306,000. So it's gone up another $12,000. So times are tight, and we've obviously, you know, we're relying on any extra funding to go to capital, and it just isn't there. Again, still a work in progress. Some of the big ticket items that we're looking at tonight, and a couple of these are goal items, water and electricity. But also trash disposal. We spend $55,000 a year on trash disposal on the waterfront, some of which is large dumpsters that we put at the top of all of our slips for the most part. But my experience of 24 years here has been, while the fishermen definitely use those, a large majority is the public dumping. I mean, there's general public visitor trash for sure. I mean, although they have the normal small trash containers. But people dumping their TVs and their refrigerators and their sofas and their old worn-out lawn chairs. I mean, we get everything in there. And while it's a fine to do that, if you get caught, you know, most people do the midnight run and dump it in there. And it's just seeing that year in and year out, I think it's time to just remove those. Provide access for our fishermen out at our gear storage yard, along with the fishermen's gear storage yard, and maybe we have to put an extra dumpster out there. But bring that cost down by not providing dumpsters for everybody to dump all their household trash into. I don't have an exact number of what that might save per year, what percentage of that $55,000 that is, but I think it's a significant enough to be looked at, and I don't think it will have an impact on trash accumulation on the waterfront because those dumpsters typically aren't taking the normal trash. Jeremiah?
Yeah, I very well understand that situation, Eric, and I've seen it happen too, of course. But there is a lot of vessels that come into the town, both recreational and commercial, who, needless to say, have bags of accumulated trash from a trip or their trip to or from Morro Bay or whatever, and wouldn't have transportation out to the city lot or even know where that particular dumpster might be. I'm just afraid that stuff might get thrown in places it doesn't belong.
Yeah, and I have that concern, too. I think for the recreational folks, they're mostly using the launch ramp. I think we'd leave a dumpster down there because, the boat trailer boaters coming and going all the time are always going to have a good amount of trash, and if you just use a small trash container, that's going to fill up pretty quickly. So I think we still have to provide that down there.
Am I correct in thinking that the dumpsters that you're referring to, the three that come to mind at the top of the docks, that their purpose is to serve the commercial fishermen who moor there? Am I correct in that, or am I not correct in that?
That is my understanding of why they are there. I mean, otherwise they wouldn't be put where they are. I mean, the ones at Beach Street are kind of across the parking lot a little bit, just I think for because of the boardwalk got put closer to the slip, so I think that's why they're there. But yeah, the Anchor Park, they're right at the top of the gangway and then down Launch Ramp as well.
Is there any practicality, having watched the one you're talking about at Anchor Park, having watched local restaurants use it, and I moor and next to the Beach Street slips, and you're right, all sorts of things get put in there by all sorts of folks other than commercial fishermen. Is it practical to figure out some means to leave those dumpsters where they are and make them accessible to the commercial fishermen only, i.e., I don't know, combination lock, and you don't get a combo unless you're a moorage customer, a commercial fisherman moorage customer, or something like that? Or is that just not going to work?
Well, it could work. I mean, the other dumpsters are those ones with those slots.
But it doesn't address your I haven't addressed
it. Doesn't address the cost issue.
The cost issue.
It could, if you could downsize because of that, go to a smaller dumpster because now you're just...
Well, but if, in fact, if the commercial fishermen were... If your moorage tenants were asked how important that is to them, given the option of going down, for instance, to the Harbor Department yard as opposed to walking up the dock and across the parking lot, coming back to 100% cost recovery policy of the city, so that if you want it, you got to pay for it. And given the moorage fees, this isn't going to be a popular thought with the commercial fishermen, but given the very reasonable nature of the mooring fees right now in Morro Bay, if you want garbage service there, and if there's some way that you can be dedicated just to the commercial fishermen and they're willing to pay for it, then leave them there if they're willing to pay for it. Gene?
Yeah, the liverboards need some place to get rid of their trash. And so, otherwise they can't take it home, basically. So they've got to get rid of it.
I mean, you could, to address both Gene and your concern, for the commercial fishermen and liverboards, could do some sort of a lockable system. The odd man out is going to be the non-resident guy that comes and rents a slip for a week or a month, or somebody that comes to the pier. The fishermen, the commercial fishermen particularly, not necessarily recreational fishermen because they're trailer boating it, but the commercial fisherman that comes on a temporary basis, and like Jeremiah says, he didn't necessarily have a vehicle. Some of them leave vehicles in town, but not all. It would be a transportation issue.
Well, I would just, speaking just for myself and not for the Harbor Advisory Board, I would encourage a little more thought. Your point about the 55,000 or whatever the number is, I completely understand it, and I completely sympathize with it, and it's coming right out of your budget, and you're not being reimbursed for it. So what I would encourage is some thought as to whether there is some kind of practical approach. What, Lynn?
Nothing.
Oh. So some kind of practical approach that would provide those that, essentially the mooring and moorage customers with access to a dumpster and on a fee basis. Gene?
Yeah, a number of years ago, the trash containers down by the boat launch were the big lift-up lids. And now they're locked in with just a slot, maybe only 6 inches wide and 2 or 3 feet wide. And that seems to eliminate all the garbage bags and lawnmowers and everything else that used to get stuck down there. So I think that's a pretty practical solution.
Glenn?
How many dumpsters are there in total? And does the cost vary by their size? I see you list here 1, 2, or 3 yard dumpsters.
Yeah, the cost varies by size, whether you're 1, 2, or 3 yarders. We've got one down at the launch ramp itself. We removed the one that was kind of in the middle of the parking lot, which was really the most heavily abused one. It didn't seem to serve any purpose. We still got the fish cleaning carcass dumpster, that would remain. There's a, and I think those are all
three yarders. The big ones.
Down at the base of the stairs across the street from Tidelands Park is one of those short ones, probably a 2 yarder. At the top of the gangway, right next to the very southern end or northern end of Anchor Memorial Park for the Dune Street slips, is another 3 yarder, 3 or 4 yarder. And then there's another short one, one of the little 2 yarders at the North T Pier. And then we've got one in the Gaffco parking lot across from the gangway for those Beach Street slips on.
And one in front of the South T Pier parking lot.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, South T Pier and Beach Street slips. So there's 6 plus, I think we've got 2 each of trash and recycled down at the Rock itself. And we wouldn't take those away, obviously. But
there's 3 at the Rock, is that right?
Is there 3 or 4?
Quite a few.
Yeah.
Who's paying for the ones at the Rock?
We are.
Why?
Why do we have 3 huge dumpsters out at the Rock if we don't want people dumping big pieces of furniture?
They're the slotted top ones.
Okay.
Which, as Gene says, that helps, although if someone's determined, they're going to get it in there or leave it sitting next to it. But also because we removed all the dumpsters that were along the water, not the dumpsters, all the trash cans that were along the water, especially those big belly ones that were going away, and they were ugly and blocking views, and it does look a heck of a lot better. And we tried for a while to remove all the trash cans out there. I still think pack it in, pack it out. I mean, if you can drive down there with it full, why can't you drive home with it empty, or back to your hotel with it empty? But that wasn't the most popular sentiment, so we ended up putting dumpsters, increasing the dumpsterage at the restroom instead.
Okay, let's wrap that. Go ahead, Jeremiah.
We gotta move on. Those dumpsters down at the Rock, are they well used? In other words, there's 3. Could 2 do the
job?
They're
pretty well used. I mean,
yeah. Okay, and then, this is a question. The carcass dumpster is a big one.
Yeah.
Does that fill up? It seems to me every time I look in that, it's about a quarter to a third full.
It doesn't often fill up unless there's some bite going on. I mean, you probably remember, especially albacore. I mean, I've seen it overfilling in albacore years, but that's not very often. It could downsize. I mean, when we get to the launch ramp renovation project, it's going to be built into a better enclosure. Right now, I fear putting a smaller one, it'll lower it down, and the birds will be able to get back in there because we've kind of MacGyver engineered that to keep the birds out, but that one could go smaller.
Okay, Eric, what I'd like to do with this agenda item is have you wrap it up electricity, and then I want to, if it's okay with you, if it meets your purposes, I'd like to give the board an opportunity to comment or question on the attached documents, the operating fund, the equipment replacement stuff, because we're pushing it here. Is that okay with you?
So I'm fine with that. As far as the dumpster goes, I've got some general comments. Is there other approaches?
Hang on a sec. So on any of those items, I mean A, B, and C, if you feel it would be useful to put that on the agenda for May, happy to do that. A revisit.
Sure, if you want to go about that way.
Well, no, I must have just skipping them tonight. I mean, if after consideration you think it would be useful to put them back on the agenda to have additional discussion, then that's fine. Go ahead.
Well, maybe the way to approach that is we, on water and electricity, look at it in a general sense. If it's something the HAB thinks is worth pursuing, we can bring it back in more detail and have a more robust discussion about it come May.
Well, I think given, is 50 grand significant? Well, just taking water, for instance, is 50 grand significant relative to $2,042,842? If you want some help, put it on. We'll put it on the agenda.
Okay. Yeah, it's significant.
I think so too.
Yeah,
50 is sort of my threshold for significance as it relates to a $2 million budget.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean I'm right. But thank you very much for bringing these forward. We've danced around these in the past, but you shining the light on them in terms of the Harbor Department's budget, that's really where the rubber meets.
So how much do you want to go into these tonight versus May?
A, B, and C?
Yeah, well, A, I think we...
Well, B and C, I mean, you stated the case, and let me just pull the board. That's the way to do this. Would we like to see the issue of recovering water costs, which are currently being charged against the Harbor Department's budget? We would like to discuss that.
Tonight?
No. Period.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. So that'll be in May, and likewise, electricity.
Yep.
Okay. Recovery. Okay. Got it. So I'll put them on the May agenda.
Okay. So for May, and I'm going to throw this out there. What we want to see. I want to get a little bit more detail on what we want to see, and I'm assuming it's. And I've tonight I had some breakout of these items, and I would like to do more and have a more succinct, hey, here's what it is for per slip or per set of slips, and break it out a little better to have
that would be
a
good
better to, sense that, of
because I,
where
I,
it's going.
I would have asked you those questions, or someone, one of us would have asked you those questions.
I mean, right now I can tell you water, the slip use is taking about 10% of our water by cost. The pier use has taken about 20% of our water. Both T-piers are taking about 20% of our water by cost.
So you want to go ahead and go through this tonight?
No, I'm just, is this enough? Or do we want to break this out in more detail? Tidelands has taken about 20%
Why
by
don't
cost.
You and I discuss it when we set the
okay.
agenda? And I,
okay.
And I'd be happy to speak for the board, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so is it all right with you if we move on to the board's comments or questions about your budget documents?
Sure. So would you like me to do a quick overview of them?
No, they kind of, well.
Or tell you what they are? So I guess I'll.
If we need to for the public, yes. Otherwise, we've all read them and they speak for themselves.
Okay. Well, I'll do a very quick. So attached is our Harbor budget overview and goal documents. This year we were tasked with not just giving an overview of our budget, which is the first page, kind of explaining who we are and what we are and what we do and how we go about budgeting, but department's core goals and how do you intend to achieve them, what you've accomplished for this year and what you want to accomplish for next year in a general sense from the operating fund standpoint, and then also into the key program services, you know, what we provide, what all the things that we generate revenues for and spend money on, what we provide. There's a list of those. Activity and work highlights, those are just sort of a statistical sheet. Harbor Equipment Replacement Fund, again, the core goals and key projects that we're looking at in that fund for the upcoming year. And then the accumulation fund in general sense currently exists. And I think this is the number we've been trying to get at for quite a while here. Currently exists about $482,000 in that fund. And as we know, we've got at least $4 million plus of major capital projects to take care of, if not more. And so we need to find either additional revenues or additional cuts, and we've cut things to the bone as it is. So that's what that document is. So if you've got any input on that, I can take
that. Yeah, let's stop there. So this is the Department of Purpose Budget Overview document. Gene, questions or comments? Jeremiah?
Yeah, I know you mentioned this earlier, Eric, but the T-bid or the TOT, I guess that's the same. But can you tell me again what the answer from the city was on the harbor receiving a portion of that?
So the revenues we get are from our lease fees, base rents, percent gross rents, and all of our slip and boating and other fees. We do not receive any sales tax. We do not receive any transient occupancy tax. And we do not receive any of the T-bid tax or fee, whatever that is, which is a 3% on each hotel room per night that goes to tourism. Or property tax. We don't receive any of those taxes that are levied on our waterfront properties, which, as I reported earlier, in talking to State Lands Commission, that's pretty normal and pretty the standard up and down the coast with Tidelands Trust properties.
Okay, that was the State Lands Commission said that was normal.
Yeah,
okay.
Who's our landlord? When I asked that
why?
Same question of our
previous,
okay. When I asked that same question of our previous finance director, the answer was because you're not a taxing authority. You have to be a taxing authority to receive taxes, which we're not. We're not a taxing authority.
Well, those places that are being taxed are within your authority. Yeah, I just don't understand why that is what it is. I mean, just because it is what it is doesn't mean it's right or it can't be changed. But
well,
I don't know. I don't know what to say.
Well, out of those stated sources of revenue, the one that is not a tax per se is TBID. That's an assessment. So if the board wants to pursue that as a discussion item, and the outcome would be either we don't do anything, we make no recommendation to council, or we already make a recommendation to council, which, by the way, we've already done on that item. Then we'll put it back on the agenda again.
You're correct. TBID is an assessment which goes towards tourism and promotion, which we do gain benefit from on the waterfront.
And I believe the city manager responded to our last query on that. Is that correct, Eric?
Not the city manager.
Mm-mm. Oh, I thought.
Not the city manager.
Okay, I misheard.
Well, I'm happy to put it on the agenda as a discussion item.
I'll make that motion.
Okay.
Future.
Well, I was going to do an ask you under future agenda item, but way to go. Okay. Okay. Let's see. Which way am I going now? Oh, Lynn. Harbor Department Purpose Budget Overview. Neil?
Nothing.
Dana?
No, I'm good right now.
Okay. So that brings us to the next document. Eric? Your operating fund document.
Which document are you on?
Sorry?
Which document are you on?
The Harbor Operating Fund.
Okay.
Harbor Operating Fund.
All right. So the budget overview, I'm just... got it. Okay. Just make sure I'm breaking these up right. This is just a quick overview of the Harbor Fund, what it is, $2 million annual revenues. We were down 1.6, 1.7 at one time. And, you know, grant acquisition is a key thing for some of our capital needs. Again, our core goals and key projects are listed there and what we're looking at doing over the next year. The Harbor Fund operating budget is the administration of the Tideless Trust. That's our, you know, reason for living and reason for being here. Public safety, obviously. Necessary facilities and services for our boating and other recreational public. And management of resources and environmental stewardship. And so got, you know, for instance, the eelgrass mitigation in there and environmental stewardship and replacing the sea line dock, necessary facilities, public safety, patrol boat replacement, just starting looking into how we're going to fund that. You know, just some other general items in here that I've identified as things we're going to be looking at next year.
Okay. Questions or comments on this document? Dana?
No.
Neil?
Based on the great swing in the grant process, 40 to 50K, all the way up to 300,000K, would you say that you guys are applying for up to 300,000 every year and are falling in the 40 to 50 some year because you don't apply, or because you guys don't spend enough time on grant seeking?
No, we spend a good amount of time on, and I'll give most of the kudos to Lori over here. She's constantly looking at grant opportunities. The 300K is a high because that's the launch ramp grant. You know, 250,000 on that one just for this year that we're in right now. Typically, it's in the 40 to 50,000. You know, we get 25-ish for boat demo. We usually get somewhere between 10 and 20,000 for some vessel equipment stuff. Jet skis we've gotten some years. Rescue watercraft we've gotten some years. The cable grants that we've gotten for ice machine, up to 40,000 for 1 year on one of those, and, you know, 8,000 a year for going back to D.C. So it always seems to be pretty steady in the $40,000 to $50,000 range, but every once in a while there's a bump when something big comes along that we can jump on.
Okay. Lynn?
Nothing.
Jeremiah? Gene? Eric, on the budget overview, the first sentence is not including grants. This fund's revenues and expenses are currently approximately $2 million annually. You mean the combined revenues and expenses, or each one of them are independently approximately $2
million? Each one independently.
Okay.
$2 million revenue, $2 expenses.
Yep. Okay. Next document is Harbor Equipment Replacement Fund.
Currently, so Harbor Equipment Replacement Fund is a separate bucket, much like our accumulation fund that was established years ago to start putting money towards boats and vehicles, basically, as our big pieces of equipment. Smaller pieces of equipment are typically coming out of the operating fund on an annual basis, but this is our bucket for buying the big stuff. Currently, I've got not quite $56,000 in that fund that's accumulated over a few years. Projected amortization over the departments, the life of all of our vessels and vehicles and major equipment over the next 10 years is about $65,000 per year we should be putting into that bucket to fund these things. You know, main ones being boats with the need to replace those over time. So obviously there's a shortfall there and always has been. So
how long did it take you to accumulate the 55.7?
A couple of different years we put in 25,000. I couldn't tell you exactly which budget years. It wasn't last.
So somebody who reads this should not assume that there would be 55,700 on an annual basis against the 65,000 projected.
No, 55 is accumulated over several years.
Okay.
So as far as our, you know, plans for the future on that is we've got to start figuring out what we're going to do about our other major patrol boat. You know, we're a three-boat fleet. It probably should get down back to two-boat fleet, two twin-engine boats. We've got our boat 6-4, the one we built 4 years ago, 5 years ago now. Still relatively new and in great shape and keeping that up, but our old boat 6'8", and we need to do either replacement or major refurbishment of that. It's 32 years old, so we got to start looking at least what we want to try and do with that. Funding's a whole other matter. Then we'll be seeking DBW funding to replace our rescue watercraft, and that's what the current ones got paid for, and that was they're about $12,000 each, so we'll be looking for that funding this cycle as well. So okay. It's kind of our key things out of that budget this year.
Okay, comments and questions? Gene?
Well, 6'8 is a real good boat for inside the harbor, and I'm wondering if we can continue that just to keep it inside of the harbor, not necessarily go outside of the harbor and extend its life.
I'm currently consulting with a marine engineering expert on possibilities for that.
Jeremiah?
No.
Lynn?
I was curious as to, on the operating budget, your estimated 2017-2018 is consistently equal to or less than 2018-2019, mm-hmm. except for item...
We'll be right with you. Hold that thought.
Yeah.
No, we're on this document right here. Okay. Neil?
No.
Dana? Okay. So did I take that last comment, Director, to mean that the Harbor Department would consider refit if it was practicable?
Yes.
As opposed to replacement new?
Yeah.
Okay. That brings us to Harbor Accumulation Fund document.
So Accumulation Fund is our catch-all for all things capital, which is generally piers and slips and big stuff, although in past years it's paid for boats. But I think in past years the Accumulation Fund threw some money over into the Equipment Fund to replace boats. But it's generally our big fund for all of our major needs.
I'm sorry, we're trying to sort out a little paperwork confusion.
That's
up here.
Okay. Do we need to get back to something or should we keep going on this one?
Keep going, please.
Okay, so currently all the projects that I've got approved on the docket now are going to spend every nickel in that fund and more. Depending on how this year ends up, we've got a little shy of $500,000 in there now, and I've got more than that in projects probably lined up depending on how the Beach Street slips turn out once we get the engineering estimate on that. So it keeps pointing back to the fact that we accumulated about $900,000 in our accumulation fund up until the economic crash, but that was also and through about 2012-13, but that was also because we were getting $275,000 a year from Dynegy for the outfall lease, and when that disappeared, that obviously put a major hurt on our budget. And so we're just back to stable in terms of operating, but we're not putting any money away for accumulation and equipment. So that's obviously the big discussion item we've had for a number of months and even years here now. So that's where we're at on capital. Key projects on that list for this coming year are to renovate the ice machine with a $100,000 cable committee grant that they've thankfully granted, and appreciate that and thank them for that. Get the permits and complete the Beach Street slips project, hopefully get that done. We've had a meeting about that up in community development today. We've got some scope disagreement issues with our launch ramp renovation project with the Department of Boating and Waterways in terms of what they estimated the project's going to cost, and that has filtered down to the $250,000 grant because that's a percentage of what they think the total project cost is, and our estimate of the project cost is quite a bit different from what we believe the scope to be. So I'm trying to resolve that, but hopefully keep that project moving. And then get council approval and issue the RFP for boatyard financial feasibility. So those are sort of the big accumulation fund project. As you know, we've got about $55,000 in the accumulation fund that's earmarked for the boatyard project still as well. So anything on those?
Dana?
No.
Other end this time, Gene. Dana?
No.
Neil?
I don't have
anything.
Lynn? No.
Jeremiah? Gene? No. Eric, regarding the capital improvement projects list. You were kind enough to generate some priorities for the schedules that you, the more detailed schedules that you produced during your budget process a few months back. Have you had an opportunity during the current, the work you're doing on the current budget cycle, have you had an opportunity to refine those in any way?
I'm still refining them. I've not completed it. I wish I had. We know what the bottom line numbers are, but to make it a more user-friendly, readable form, no, I haven't completed that yet. Still working on it.
When that dust settles on that, do you think that the definitions of the priorities, the initial definitions that you assign to the 1 through 5 priorities, are they going to change any?
They're worth looking at again. You mean the ones that we sat together as a committee and mm-hmm. What does priority 1 mean? What does priority 2 mean?
Yeah.
It's probably worth looking at them again.
Yeah. I mean, in light of, I mean, you really got your head, you folks, the department, it really has its head into the current budget, and I think it might be useful to do that.
Yeah. I think that those documents need to be as simple and user-friendly as possible, like the past, and we're getting better with the city's budget documents. The average citizen looks at the city's budget, overall budget documents that we put in front of the council, and it makes your head spin because it's all over the map, and I think we need to make those as simple as possible, continue to refine them.
I consider those schedules that you developed to be the most useful financial tools I've seen come out of the department in 10 years. And I would encourage the continued refinement and their use as planning tools, not just for establishing an annual budget.
No, I totally agree.
And as a way to communicate with city management.
Yeah, I wish I could take an item on there and say, okay, that's this year. We'll do that one. We just don't have the funding for it. But yeah, no, I agree. I think the most important part for them right now is just to keep that picture in the forefront.
Okay, next document. That's the last document, actually. And let's circle back to the operating fund for a second, which was the first one we talked about. Lynn, you had a question on operating fund? This last schedule, you might want to refer to get everybody on the same page.
Okay.
It was the last page of that document set, labeled Harbor Operating, and then the highlight is Activity and Workload Highlights.
Right, it's the table. And under this table, you've got 2017-18 estimated and 2018-2019 budgeted. And I was curious because all of those numbers for 2018-19 are higher than the estimated for 2017-18, except for emergency responses. And for emergency responses, you have 2017-18, 125 estimated. And for 2018-19 in the budget, 120.
We're planning for a few emergencies.
Aren't emergencies sort of by definition not
unplanned?
Planable.
Sorry, I had to throw a little comic relief in there.
Just curious.
This is a brand new document that we were requested to create. These are based somewhat on statistics that we've had for calls for service, but also on sort of a seat of the pants crystal ball into the future. My number, to be honest with you, my dropping that number by 5 was my hope and desire and aim to that our department continue to, and I'm not saying we need improvement, but all public safety departments are always striving to do better and reduce mayhem, so to speak. I would chalk that up to we're going to do a better job next year of being proactive and preventing problems before they happen and see problems before they occur and get out on the water more and make sure boats don't break loose when the wind blows really hard and So we're going to have less emergencies due to being more proactive.
Excellent explanation.
That's what I hope to do. I think we do a great job, but we can always do more.
That brings us to agenda item C3, update from the Eelgrass Ad Hoc Committee. Lynn?
Where am I? Okay. At the last meeting or a meeting before, I was asked about an update on all of the research projects that had been mentioned probably a year ago. There were 11 research projects coming out of Cal Poly and the NEP that with various amounts of funding for those projects. And somebody asked me about them. I don't remember who it was. So I have an update. And this will be quick because research goes about as quickly as government does. Most of these research projects have not been completed, and we don't really have a whole lot of information from them. I can give you a quick rundown on the list of various things. One is baywide mapping of the eelgrass beds. That was done and has been done over a number of years, but they changed some of their equipment in that, and so it was kind of having to be redone, and they weren't comparable. There should be an updated report on that in another month or so. The information that I'm giving you and my source on this is the NEP Lexi. So, monitoring of the restoration beds. The 2017 eelgrass report will be out in June, and that's when that information will be available. Monitoring and analysis of the water quality. There was a section in the previous eelgrass monitoring report, one that was done 2014 to 2016, and that is available if anybody wants to read it. But the new one will be coming out with a full year's water quality data in this summer. Fish population and how it is impacted by eelgrass habitat. We have no real additional information published or in final report yet, and I don't have a date or a time frame on when that will happen. Eelgrass genetics is one thing that they do have, not a final report, but a fairly conclusive report that the gene pool of the eelgrass in Morro Bay is homogeneous but sufficiently divergent to not indicate a need to bring in additional DNA from outside sources or other areas. There was a study to be done on crab in relation to eelgrass, with and without eelgrass, actually. And there is still work being done on that. Nothing has been published or even concluded. Publishing is the very last part. Sediment coring, the results of sediment coring, again, will be available this summer. So all of this stuff is coming up this summer after they have a full year's work of research. Historic changes in conditions that might contribute to the decline of eelgrass. That is a paper that should be submitted this summer at the end of the school year. Planting, outplanting experiments where they plant it in various areas and watch to see how it grows. It's too early to bring any conclusions there. Bird survey data. We do have some conclusions, and it's fairly obvious. The eelgrass goes down and the birds go down. the number of birds go down. And then eelgrass rack and sueda plants, that is still not concluded. The student is still working on it. And the last one, which is probably the most important to us, is analyzing all historical data and long-term monitoring data from the NEP to build a conceptual model on the most likely causes of eelgrass decline. They're still working on that, and Lexi will give us an update on it and the conclusions when it happens. So, sorry. Any questions? Any?
Study.
Oh, yeah, that was the next thing. We're still waiting to resolve. I think Eric is talking to Anchor QEA, and they have not completely developed the scope of work. They're still working on that, and it's been a while. Eric?
So we gave them our scope, right, and what we were hoping to get out of it. I spoke to Jack, say it was last week or it might have been a week before, and they've got all their other projects out of the way they need to get out of the way, and he's just starting up into that and putting together his initial package of what he plans to do and getting that to me, and then I'll get with you and the rest of the committee, and we'll start moving forward on that.
Anything?
Questions, no. Comments?
Questions, Lynn? Comments?
No, thank you.
It's good job.
It's great. Okay, next agenda item is update from the Marine Sanctuary Ad Hoc Committee. As previously reported by this body and to this body, we were informed by the Marine Sanctuary folks that the proposed Chumash Heritage National Marine Sanctuary, while it had been designated, there was no action on it. We were told that about 2 months ago now, and that hasn't changed any. On Saturday, March 17th, this past March 17th, the Santa Lucia chapter of the Sierra Club organized a public event in support of that sanctuary application. And during that event, one of the principal reasons and rationales for the Chumash Heritage National Marine Sanctuary was said to be opposition to new and oil gas leases off the Central Coast. I did not notice anywhere at any time during that presentation did any of the folks that were there putting it on and talking mention that there are currently over 40 existing federal, state, and local protections that apply to the waters off the Central Coast and between the two existing marine sanctuaries. One of the federal protections, which is in place until 2022, is a ban on California offshore drilling. Another one that's in place for the state is the California Coastal Sanctuary Act, which since 1994 bans any new leasing of state offshore mineral tracts, i.e. oil and gas. We reported on all those protections about a year ago. People seem to have forgotten that they exist. Any questions or comments? Nope. Okay. That brings us to an update from the Working Waterfront Ad Hoc Committee. Dana?
So, last week, was it last week? March 22nd, we had a joint meeting between the Harbor Advisory Board and the Planning Commission to go over
the working waterfront and also inclusion of Measure D into the city's general plan and local coastal program zoning code update. This was a really good meeting, I thought. It was very well done. Staff, Eric Endersby, Harbor Director, and Scott Graham put together a good presentation for us. It was really easy to follow. Both our chair, Ron Reisner, and Planning Commission, Jerry Luer, did a great job of keeping us all on track. And most of these items, we had a lot of discussion, and I'll just kind of go through them. We had six items that we went over, and the Harbor Advisory Board would put their input, and the Planning Commission would put their input, and we would come to some kind of, after discussion, we pretty much agreed on everything, and were able to get through all of these six items as they were presented, pretty much as they were presented, but I'll go through them. So the first one was the Working Waterfront Mission Statement, and as the Harvard Advisory Board, we know how many times we've gone through this, and or all of these things, but this was voted on right away, unanimously, both boards. There wasn't really any discussion. Everyone agreed with it. So this was good to hear after we had discussed it, and we didn't really want to pare it down too much, and it went well. The next one was the working waterfront sectors, which we have three sectors that we came up with, the fisheries here at Measure D area, and then the visitors section in between there and the launch ramp, and then from there on down the southern section. That had a lot of discussion, but in the end, it was unanimously agreed upon. Let's see here. The number three was the working waterfront land uses. So this, there was quite a bit of discussion on this too, but all in all, both boards, or advisory board and the planning commission, agreed on what was presented, and we didn't really have to make any changes. We just wanted to put so that one came out pretty well, just the way we had it in our staff report. So that was number four. And then the next three all had to do with Measure D. The first one is Measure D primarily for the purposes of ambiguity. This item, we had a lengthy discussion. It was agreed upon the issues concerning commercial fishing. All three of these, we kind of went back and forth on some of the same items, I must say, a little bit here and there. There was a lot of overlapping. But this one, number five, Measure D, clearly incidental there too. And then six, Measure D, non-commercial recreational. We probably spent more time on these three than I think on any of the other items. It was pretty lengthy, but when it was all said and done, I think everybody was pretty well, how can I say this? Well, we were very caught up on everything Measure D, especially the Planning Commission. They were very happy that we came to them with all this information. Let me see here. I have all these comments on here, but it's just pretty lengthy. Okay, so under the number five, Measure D, clearly incidental. The one thing we wanted to add into that, as it relates to Measure D, sometime something fishermen need or is directly supported to them and is waterfront dependent or marine dependent, these are directly fishing activities. These were the kinds of things that we were recommending be added into the language there. And then number six, where we were talking about non-commercial recreational, it was how to prove that someone was engaging in recreational fishing and demonstrating this satisfactory to the harbor director. It was pretty much kind of left alone somewhat. I mean, there's language in here that says, you know, kind of a list of things that they should have on their boat, but we were looking at this language where they were demonstrating that they were engaging in recreational fishing, so that it would be satisfactory. So this way that the harbor director or the harbor department could make those judgments and at the same time have some kind of verbiage here to back it up, because there isn't right now anything like that. Let's see here. So I don't know what else to say about this. The timing of this, we're hoping that after this goes to General Plan Advisory Committee, and then it'll go back to the Planning Commission, the City Council, we're hoping that it'll be up for adoption in September. Hopefully there'll be a draft coming out in a month from this. Am I correct in that, saying that? That's what I...
Yeah, but what you're referring to is the proposed update of the general plan and the local coastal plan.
Correct.
And that
I'm sorry. Which this will all be in.
And for those that are unfamiliar with that, those documents, they result directly and indirectly in land development decisions, the city making land, not us, city making land development decisions and zoning decisions. So that's what all this is boiled down to in aid of our working water, the work of this body on working waterfront and Measure D has resolved itself into input into the general plan and local coastal plan update process, which is underway right now and will be completed this year. We don't know exactly how that is going to effectuate itself in terms of land use and policies and zoning, because that's what they're working on. But that's the purpose, as Dana was reporting. And that's why we met with the Planning Commission.
Yeah, and I just want to say we had a public speaker who brought up the working waterfront. And I think there's a misconception with that title, working waterfront, when you start looking at, especially at the southern section, which Mr. Martoni was talking about, that working waterfront means development. Working waterfront means commercial fishing. Working waterfront means whatever, you know, more of an industrial style or business oriented. And obviously we have ESHA areas back there. We have six different land uses going on in southern section. And then those will stay intact. I mean, there's zoning and then there's the general plan. And so I just hope people realize that just because it says working waterfront, this is the working waterfront as we see it. You know, there is a marina in the back. And it's non-commercial. And then, you know, up here we have our Measure D area. But the whole purpose of this is to protect that working waterfront and the marine-dependent uses that we have.
To define and protect as it relates to Morro Bay.
Correct.
Gene?
Yes. I attended the meeting as a board member, and then I stepped down and spoke in public comment, then I had to step out of the room. My public comment was basically across the working waterfront. I wanted to incorporate something dealing with historical use of different uses of the area, and to be considered in relationship to existing non-conforming uses and time limits. And then at that point, I stepped out, and the discussion continued on. But I want to thank Dana and Ron for continuing on with the committee.
Well, the discussion, and to be clear, the discussion continued on specifically on your public comment point. And the community services director pointed out that at present, that provided that use remains, that use is continued with not longer than a six-month delay, that it can continue. So whether 6 months is enough to accommodate some of the plans that folks have and how long, and your point was in public comment, it takes a really long time to develop some of this stuff. Listening to you, 6 months is not long enough. If we want to address that at some point in terms of our working waterfront work, then we'll address it. We'll put it on the agenda. We'll discuss it. And if we make a recommendation to council, we'll make a recommendation to council. But it needs to be declared as an agenda item if we're going to do that. Okay, anything else on this? Dan?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, thanks. Jeremiah?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment on the working waterfront as a definition. So I think Bill Martoni was here earlier this evening with concerns, and you just voiced something relating to that. But working waterfront can be defined as the entire community. It doesn't mean, I want to allay people's fears of rezoning their residential property or something like that, because everything is still relative to a working waterfront. This is not a rezoning issue. It's just...
Not only the entire community, which is a good point, but an infinite number of uses within whatever that designated area is. There is no exclusion. There's no... The city of Morro Bay has not established some official position about what uses will, or at this point, what will or will not occur within a designated area. So you're quite right. It could be whole
city. I think the definition, I think perhaps it might be up to us even to come up with a definition just to...
That. Oh, yeah, we did. We worked on it for 2 years.
Well, I mean the.
And we made made recommendations to council, which did not exclude any activity in any of those zones, with the possible exception of Measure D, which is self-stating by virtue of ordinance. So.
Okay, I just wanted to make it clear that this is not a rezoning issue, or people don't have to worry about any changes to the current waterfront situation.
Okay, anything else? Okay. So that brings us to agenda item D, which is declaration of future agenda items. Gene, would you restate really quickly your earlier future agenda item, please?
I'm trying to remember
I recommend to the city council that we review the... what the terminology was that we were looking out for, not a tax, but the
TBIT
assessment.
TBIT assessment.
TBIT assessment funding that goes to the general plan, and see whether we can't get it towards the Harbor Enterprise Fund.
Do you mean the TOT and sales tax?
Not TOT, because that's a tax.
Not the tax.
TBIT assessment.
The TBIT assessment.
Got it. Got it.
A very clear motion, but yeah.
All right. No, it's declared. That's it. We're good. Okay. Anything else? Okay. Eric, anything else?
Dana? No, I'm just slightly confused.
Hang on a second. By what?
T-bid. The assessment made under the T-bid goes specifically to
currently it does, that's correct. But the point is, out of all of those possible revenue sources that are not currently feeding the harbor, the only one that isn't a tax is TBID. That's why we're talking about it. Would something ever happen? I don't know. But we got $4 million we got to find.
But the TBID, it's an assessment specifically designated, and it's obviously changed to who and what is managing it. It's now the city managing it, where it used to be a separate body. But it is to go specifically to promotion and advertising. And
Yes.
Would mean if we get some of it, then now we're going to become a promotion or an advertiser.
Well, so that's the question. I mean, but it was I followed that very carefully when the city took over TBID from the hoteliers, and it was its purposes were slightly redefined at that time, and perhaps there's an opportunity for them to be redefined again.
Okay.
Given that the waterfront infrastructure is a primary draw for the very tourists that the hotels would quite rightly like to see put their heads on their beds.
The agenda item is to discuss this.
Yeah, just to discuss it. Oh, thanks. Well, I'm just trying to help the director with this little confusion. So, but you're right, Gene. We all want to go home. Okay.
As far as future agenda items, I believe we had the contemplating undergrounding a line and going in with the Maritime Museum.
It's declared, yeah.
Yeah, we don't have to do that anymore because we already have our undergrounding is in process right now.
Yeah, I saw the ditch. That's cool. Yeah. Okay, we'll strike that one. So we're going to strike Morro Bay Maritime Museum overhead power line undergrounding from the declaration item. Declaration of future agenda items. Okay, thank you, Dan. Okay, anything else?
No.
Motion to adjourn.
So
moved. Whoa, second.
Second.
Second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Thank you for your patience.